I'd like to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call.
Your Worship, all members of council are present.
Thank you. There is no addendum this evening, but there are some announcements. Just wanted to comment about the Optimist Club in Fort Erie, which each April or May holds a dinner to recognize excellence among elementary school students in Fort Erie. And this year, they had their meeting last Tuesday, and they recognized 8 students from the public and Catholic schools in town, elementary schools, and I thought it would be appropriate to mention their names. So the individuals, the students recognized were Zach Braddock from St. Philomena, Jillian Reesbosch from St. Joseph's, Riley Nickel from St. George Catholic School, Matea Marr from OLV, Adam Whale from Stevensville Public, Megan Dale from Peacebridge Public, and Maddie Barrett from Garrison Road. And I want to thank the Optimists for taking the time to do that recognition. It's a wonderful evening for the students, and it's very encouraging for them as they progress with their studies. The next night, the town held its health and safety banquet. It was the largest turnout I think that the town has ever had with respect to recognition of the safety and longevity awards. There were 96, I believe, municipal employees and council members there. The MC for the evening was Councillor Butler, who did a wonderful job and recognized, I believe it was about 30 employees, or maybe not quite that many, but it was a total of 425 years of service to the community by these various individuals. And I won't mention them all, but the ones who were recognized for 30 years of service were Lisa Barnhart, Carrie Honey, and Kevin Winnie. So thank you to Councillor Butler and to all of the employees who, again, this past year had a very good safety record. They take their health and safety training and responsibilities very seriously, and I want to congratulate them for that. On Saturday evening, I attended the Fort Erie Multicultural Center 25th anniversary. Councillors Passero and McDermott were in attendance. A wonderful evening in recognition of the 25 years of service to our community by the Fort Erie Multicultural Center, which helps to orient and integrate the newcomers in our community to Fort Erie. They're also very active in helping those refugees who come into town to move on to other places if we can't accommodate them here. That's unfortunate because it's a loss to us because of the richness and diversity which the newcomers provide to our community as well as our country. So congratulations to the Fort Erie Multicultural Center. And then I wanted to mention in terms of upcoming events that the two high schools, Fort Erie Secondary School and Ridgeway Crystal Beach High School, are both hosting farewell open houses this weekend. Friday, May the 19th from 5 until 9 p.m. and Saturday, May the 20th from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. And then it's all hands on deck because this is the segue to Party on the Patio, which is May the 20th, and which of you organizers will be speaking this evening? Councillor Butler, back to you.
Thank you, Your Worship. So Party on the Patio, my co-chairs are sitting alongside council here, Councillor Zanko and Councillor Passero. We've worked very hard the past year to make sure that this Fire and Ice Gala is going to be even better than the one prior to it. We have a different spin that's going to be performing a fire show, and then we have 3 great bands that will also be performing that evening. We are happy to say that there are only 17 seats remaining to be sold. So we've done an amazing job, I think, and I really believe that everybody that will be attending will be having a great time. It will be very hot, but they'll be refreshed. And all those that failed to get their tickets this year, they're going to be sorry. That's all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. And I have one sad note, which I should make reference to this evening. We just received notification that the Snowbird event scheduled for May the 24th has been canceled. There are some issues relative to logistics, and we're advised that there are 5 events that they were to participate in that have been canceled, and so unfortunately that will not take place on September the 24th, and as we get more information, we'll make that available to the public. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? Madam Clerk, I have one with respect to PDS 39 for 2017, which relates to Roy Berry's property. I've represented him in the past, and pecuniary interest with respect to those matters. There are no other disclosures of pecuniary interest. There are no public notices of any upcoming meetings. There are no public meetings this evening. We have a consent agenda. Could I have a motion to move the items in the consent agenda? Councillor Zanko. Are there any questions with respect to any of those various items that are contained in the consent agenda? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just on the first report, PDS 35-2017, the Alliston Woods subdivision.
Yep.
The second that, we're asked to amend the conditions of the subdivision as detailed in Appendix 6. Are all the items in Appendix 6 amendments, or just a few of them?
Brady?
Through to the councillor. Appendix 6 contains all of the conditions of draft plan approval with the amendments to it as requested.
Which ones would be the amendments? And the reason I'm asking this is I brought this up several times over the past, and when we get a report like this, reading that there, I'm looking, and I don't know which ones are the amendments, and I've asked that when we have these reports come forward, if there's any amendments or changes, that we put the changes or the amendments in a different colored font. For example, if they were all in red font, we would know what are the amendments, and then we would be better informed as to what we're actually voting on, because right now I don't know what is an amendment and what isn't an amendment unless we go back to the original and then compare notes.
Well, it's my understanding, and Mr. Brady, you can correct me, but the body of the report makes reference to the two amendments requested by the region, and
those would be found as condition 54 and 55.
And are there any others?
And the region has also requested a text change to condition 32. This is outlined on page 3 of the report.
So although those are in the body of the report, in the future, could we not simply redline what those changes are in the appendix that we attach to the report?
Yes.
So those are the only 3 amendments?
Yes, those are the only 3 amendments.
Okay. Now going into the appendix 6, just an inquiry on this here. It's page 18, clause 33. And there's a warning clause that's to be inserted in the purchase and sale agreement. And I'm just wondering, is it not allowed to be registered on title? And here's the problem that I see. The first owner out will receive notice or the warning clause in his purchase and sale agreement, but any subsequent sale after that, no one will ever know about the warning clause because there's no mandate that says that they have to include it in a resale purchase and sale agreement. And just couldn't something like this be registered on title? And then each owner that in the future will know that there may be some problems with odors and noise coming from the pumping station.
It will be registered on title because it will be part of the subdivision agreement, but Mr. Brady, do you have further comment on that?
Yes. If the subdivision agreement will identify it. The problem with putting environmental clauses, which is of this type, in the registry system, the registrar, that's the land registry office, doesn't always allow them. So there's always an attempt to do it, but the registry office sometimes doesn't allow them. If we put it as a condition that it must be put in at the registry office and it can't be cleared, then the subdivision can never be put forward.
Councilor Luberts.
Okay.
So the provision itself is included in the subdivision agreement. That will be registered on title, but question would be if future purchasers will bother to take a look at the subdivision agreement. But it won't be in each separate deed going forward.
Yeah, but the noise, the clause won't be on title, so.
It'll be in the subdivision agreement, which will be registered on title.
Correct.
So if you were to search title for any of the lots within that subdivision, that's an agreement that will show up, and some lawyers will bring that to the attention of their clients, and some may not.
And there's where the problem lies, that's what I'm saying, and I'm just caught in between as to, I'm not against the report or anything, it's just that, you know, if you put it on the first out, then I don't understand why we can't at least have it so that when someone does do a title search, and like you said, one lawyer will do the title search and look at the site plan agreement and another lawyer won't, then it doesn't get disclosed to the new buyer. And then we have someone calling in for complaints about an odor or noise, and we say, well, it's in the site plan agreement.
Subdivision agreement.
Or subdivision agreement, and you know, we're sorry, we can't do anything about it, and then, you know, they're upset with the town. It's always us that they get upset with.
This would have come before council in 2014, and this was a condition in draft approval then. I don't know whether it was raised in 2014 or not. It would have been, since this plan was originally draft approved in 2001, I presume that it's been extended a few times since then. So, Mr. Brady, I know you haven't been here that long, but I don't know whether you have any recollection of this issue being raised at previous requests for extension.
I don't believe it's been raised at any of previous extensions. I wasn't here at the time that it was originally draft plan approved.
Right.
But
Councilor Lewis, back to you.
No, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Any other questions with respect to NDMs? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. Regarding the Land Committee minutes, Section 3, Number 7, the policy for development and or redevelopment of telecommunication towers, just wondering when we could expect that to make its way through the process and back to us.
Mr. Brady, are you working on that, or is that?
The Planning Department is working on that. Given the load that we have right now, 2 to 3 months, something like that.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Brady, I had, with respect to the Alliston Woods extension and the three modifications to the conditions, do you know if the developer has expressed its views one way or the other with respect to those additional conditions, revised conditions?
Whenever there are revised conditions, we always provide them to the developer's agent, and that has been done in this particular case. There has been no objections raised.
And the report with respect to the capital budget for the Stevensville Mini Park, actually, although the report makes reference to a resident, there have been a number of residents that have been in communication with Councillor Nutt and possibly other councillors. So just wanted to clarify that. And with respect to report PDS 38, which is the River Lee Estates, how was the parkland dedication payment calculated? And it wasn't clear to me exactly what the amount is.
I can certainly tell you how it's calculated. It's calculated on the basis of the value of the land the day before the registration of the subdivision. And and cash payment.
It's just been relieved. Mr. Corvar is here in case you don't have that information.
Mr. Corvar?
Good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, the value that was assigned to this particular development for cash in lieu of parkland dedication was the minimum value that's in the town's bylaw that deals with parkland.
Is $2,000?
Per unit, and there's three units in this.
So that would represent 5%?
Yes.
Of the value of those lots. Okay. Thank you. And then I had one other question for Mr. Jansen. It's with respect to the capital variance report. actually, maybe it's not Mr. Jansen, maybe it should be Mr. Walsh. And it relates to the sidewalk repair project and the budget. And there is a surplus, and that's going to be directed, according to the recommendation, back to the road refurbishing reserve. But if we have extra money, contract of that nature, couldn't we consider expanding the number of sidewalks that we repair? Because there's always sidewalks that need repair.
You're absolutely correct, Mr. Mayor. And typically that's what we do. But by the time the contractor had finished the specified scope of work, it was so late in the season that there wasn't an opportunity to add more work.
Thank you very much. If there aren't any other questions, then I will call the question on the consent agenda items. All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. That takes us then to Planning and Development Services, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now open. We have a couple of presentations and delegations this evening, starting with Jim Merrick from 379 Willowwood Avenue regarding the opposition to the extension of draft plan approval for Hazelwood Subdivision, report number PDS-36-2017. Mr. Merrick, if you could come to the podium, state your name and your address for the record. And then once you are finished your presentation, if you would stay at the podium for questions from councillors, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Good evening, Your Worship, and members of council. My name is Jim Merrick, and I reside at 379 Willowwood Avenue. My home is directly east and immediately adjacent to the proposed subdivision, your report number PDS-36-2017. File number 350308-0081, known as Extension of Draft Plan Approval, Hazelwood Draft Plan of Subdivision. It is my understanding that Council and Committee is submitting this report to the Council this evening. I am not against development generally. In the real estate industry, the key issue for any transaction is location, location, location. I, together with residents on the attached petition list, 61 of my neighbors, which I started collecting on Saturday morning, I'll explain why I'm so late later, and counting, oppose the Hazelwood subdivision because it is an inappropriate location for such a build. I take this position for five reasons. Water risk, biodiversity hotspot risk, municipal taxes, approvals thus far, and general process. Now, to water risk. Overall water flows in the area, including creeks, ditches, conduit, and the lake level, as well as the water table for the immediate area and resultant ponding, are at their highest levels in memory. According to my neighbor, I won't mention his name now, who lives three doors up the street and is an original resident of the community. He has never seen ponding like we have had over the last few weeks in all the 50 years that he has lived here. Recently, he was on the beach and observed the large conduit that discharges all flows from the area into the lake, including the creek bordering the proposed build. The lake levels were so high that the conduit couldn't happen. Accordingly, water backup was occurring throughout the system and thus contributed to the significant ponding in our area. Ponding on my neighbor's property immediately to the north was substantial. There were two ponds that formed and partially subsided over a week or so ago. But the last two ponds in the same part of his lot lasted 2 weeks and would not subside because the water table was maxed out. One of those ponds crept up to about 5 feet from his foundation. There is a reason why my street name is Willowwood. Years ago, there used to be many willow trees on it, but all except the very few have been cut down. Willow and cottonwood trees, the poplar family, have shallow roots and live beside rivers and in the high water table areas. They absorb tremendous amounts of water and accordingly are natural water control plants. On the Hazelwood easement road immediately behind my property and fronting the build site, there is and has been no ponding over this recent heavy rain period because there are 20 huge cotton trees on that road allowance, 60, 70, 80 feet high, 20 of them. That's just between the north and south borders of my property and then right and then the easement part of the road. Those trees, together with those on the subject property, plus other native trees, plants, shrubs, and grasses, control water flows and levels because they are inherently wetland compatible. The bricks, mortar, asphalt, and other building materials on the proposed subdivision will replace those trees, shrubs, grasses, and accordingly exacerbate the water problem, the water risk. It is imperative that any water observations and tests for flood risk be done in the late winter and spring when creeks, water tables, ponding, and lake levels are at their highest and most risky to the community. Flooding in Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, and further east is a major issue. We want to be proactive in dealing with it here. Flood insurance is only part of a security plan. Appropriate flood utility structures must also exist. I do not believe they exist sufficiently in this area to address the new realities of climate change. Second, biodiversity hotspot. Biodiversity is defined as the variation of life at levels of an organization. It depends on temperature, precipitation, altitude, soils, geography, and the presence of other species. A biodiversity hotspot is a region with a high level of endemic species that have experienced a significant loss of habitat. I believe the entire wetland from Marcy's Wood to the subject land is a biodiversity hotspot. On both sides of the border, there are major biodiversity initiatives underway to mitigate rising water level risk, preserve natural habitat, and provide for human activity. The major biodiversity project on the Canadian side is at Long Point, but Marcy's Wood is also a biodiversity focus. My point here is that the wetlands east of Marcy's Wood, across Point Abino Road, and all along the north side of Erie Road, including the subject property, are also a biodiversity focus. These lands are part of the most northerly reaches of the Carolinian Forest. They contain rare flora and fauna, some of which only survive in these wetlands. Red trilliums grow in and around the subject area. They are in a protected category. Also, there are four species of birds now designated as SAR, special species at risk, in this hotspot. C-section 4 approvals later. Municipal taxes, my third purpose, my third justification. Municipal taxes are always an issue in providing financial stability and growth in the community. Currently, there are at least six subdivisions approved or in course of build in Crystal Beach, Ridgeway, and the greater town of Fort Erie that will provide at least 466 new homes, Appendix A. I've listed them all. The Hazelwood plan provides 12 homes. 466 versus 12. Fourth, the treed area to the west of the municipal drain creek has been identified as a provincially significant wetland. Provincial planning policy requires that an environmental impact study be submitted whenever a development is proposed within 120 meters of significant wetlands. The subject lands are situated adjacent to the Point Abino environmentally sensitive area and is located approximately 113 meters from the significant wetland. Also, the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority, NPCA, commented that Condition 31 of the Hazelwood Conditions of Draft Approval be deleted and replaced with a new condition that requires an updated scoped environmental impact study to reflect the several species of bats that were recently added to the species at risk listing under the Endangered Species Act. The original environmental impact study was dated November 27, 2006. It's over 10 years ago. Also, a bird biologist has studied four threatened species in the wetland, the wood thrush, eastern wood peewee, chimney swift, and barn swallow. Please note that the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority and Niagara municipalities typically consider data older than 5 years to require an update. The one supporting this request is over 10 years old. Fifth process. Finally, I only found out about this meeting last Monday, May the 8th, when I stopped by the planning department to ask about progress on the NOPS Group April 5, 2015 request for extension to their draft plan approval. The approval process began in 2007, 10 years ago. Nobody on our street was advised and even aware of the April 5 meeting in council to consider the NOPS request or its rescheduling to tonight, May 15, 2017, except me. Accordingly, my comments and brief petitioners list, 60, are the result of the short time frame, 7 days, that I have had to organize a comprehensive and complete no position. I request an extension of time to produce such a position, such a comprehensive and complete position. The applicant has had many, 7 to 9, 7 to 9, to 11 to 15. Then he got another extension of 1 month from April 5th to tonight. We have asked for none, but I'm asking tonight time to redo this and add a few thoughts that I have had. Because I've been working on this since Thursday morning, pretty well night and day, with the help of some very fine people. Conclusion. The applicant, his page 2 of 5, plans to break ground, and this is most important. The applicant, his page 2 of 5, plans to break ground in the fall of 2017 as part of phase 1 of the development. This will preempt any activity by an updated environmental impact study because habitat will be destroyed. He says, I plan to break ground in the fall of 2017. He could change his plan tomorrow and break ground tomorrow. Bulldoze that whole area down, all those trees, all those shrubs, all those plants, all the habitat that supports the rare species. We wouldn't have anything to assess. Accordingly, no groundbreaking of any kind should begin before the final plan is approved by council. At a minimum, no groundbreaking should start before April 5, 2018. In 2015, second point in my conclusion remarks. In 2015, staff, again page 2 of 5 of their submission, expressed concern with the pace of development of the Hazelwood subdivision. At that time, they recommended a 2-year extension with additional recommendation to comply with the planning department's recommendation that council should not consider not granting any future extension unless a significant number of draft plan conditions have been met by April 5, 2017, a month ago. The addition of Niacon and Pursuit developments to the NOPS team, I don't believe, has met this deadline. I asked the question to myself just a few minutes ago. What caused the delay or the rescheduling of this agenda item from April 5, 2017 to May 15? Another extension. Maybe it was some kind of legal agreement that those guys were drafting up and hadn't been done. Well, then they did not meet the deadline set out by the planning department to do something. So in this submission, to do something is break the ground. No. Finally, council now has the opportunity to do the right thing and be proactive regarding new climate change and biodiversity risks in Fort Erie. Considering the town's mandate for urban intensification, regrowth, Crystal Beach and Ridgeway has 466 new residents underway, Why then would council forfeit its natural heritage legacy for the sake of 12 additional homes in the floodplain? This is too risky a location for a subdivision. In summary, council should not approve the Hazelwood subdivision per se or any extensions to the existing draft. There are many other subdivision locations in Fortier that are available and more appropriate than the Hazelwood plan. Hazelwood is a proposed subdivision where water and biodiversity risks far outweigh municipal tax benefits for parties all except not pursued. And thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you, Mr. Merrick. Could we have a copy of your presentation this evening?
I have this, Appendix A, which outlines the 466 and the six subdivisions, as well as four pages of persons who support this position.
Okay.
I'm a little nervous.
Councilor Giroux can grab that from you. Thank you. Does any member of council have any questions, Your Worship?
No. Thank you very much, Mr. Merrick. And if you were nervous, you did a very good job. I just want to clarify a couple of things. I don't believe that this matter was on the agenda for April the 5th. And that may have been the timing referred to in the report. Staff has the authority to extend draft approval temporarily, and I believe they did it until they could prepare this report. But I don't believe this was before council on April the 5th. But I did want to ask you, in terms of the concerns raised by the NPCA, are you familiar with any bats in this area?
I have a little fire area in the backyard, and my children come up from Toronto and my grandkids. And last summer, we have had bats, but I don't know what kind, in the evening.
Or where they
nest. I don't know what kind they are, because I think it's specific to a certain species of bat. But talking about rare species, last summer, I work hard in the garden. I love gardens. There were toads, frogs, snakes, birds. One type of snake that I saw puzzled me so much that I went up to M&R there in Vineland off of, I forget the name, Victoria Street, and I went in and asked them about this particular, which I had remembered vividly, and I had a friend also observe it, and it was a rust-colored creature, and they brought out this document which summarized all the snakes of Ontario in color and everything. This was not on that list. There were two of them, mom and son or daughter. I think there's more to this territory than people are aware of, and that's why the environmental impact study is so critical.
You mentioned as well, if I might, Madam Chair, that there are four threatened species in the wetlands. Those are the wetlands to the west.
I would say that, because the subject location is the most easterly. It's the last before civilization starts, you know.
And just for clarification, you appreciate that we are considering whether to extend the draft approval or not extend the draft approval.
Yes, I heard that. I'm not so much against the extension of the draft, but I do not want the words, "I plan to break ground in the fall," to be recognized as something that he may do, to prove to you that he's doing something.
Well,
because could happen tomorrow, and then there would be nothing for the impact study people to even study.
There are two things that would get us between now and then. The first is that council will either have to approve or disapprove the extension. If the council decides to approve the extension, it would have to be with or without an updated EIS. If it's with an updated EIS, that would prevent, and I'll clarify this with the planner, but that would prevent any activity.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, so, that would be excellent.
But that's the process. So if we got to that point, I think it would be rather foolhardy for the developer to then start to cut down trees and
try to do excavating. I would say so. They'd think they'd be in for a lawsuit, would they not?
well,
as violating your guidelines and directions.
That'd be
pretty
my
serious
guess.
Stuff.
More work for lawyers. We all know how important that is. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Merrick.
Welcome, sir.
Any other members of council? Councillor Passero and Mr. Passero, too.
That's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Merrick, for being here tonight. You raised a couple concerns early on in your presentation regarding the water table, drainage concerns, overflowing or at least widening of creeks and watersheds, things like that. If this development proceeds to the point where it's going to be built out and the developer takes into account and puts in all the restrictions that is placed on them by the municipality as far as maintaining their drainage on sites, possibly restricting the amount of flow that's going into the creeks, things that we do in subdivisions all over town, would that alleviate your concerns?
It depends on how Mother Nature's climate trends unfold. We don't know, and they are substantial.
They are.
Read southern the southern coast of Lake Ontario. Read the St. Lawrence River. We are right on Lake Erie, and as my friend saw, the big pipe, and it's this high. Water level of the lake was right up to the top.
I agree with you. I recently purchased.
We don't know. I can read something if you have a moment.
That's up to Madam Chair.
I don't think I should.
Okay.
I've taken enough time.
I just wanted to. I recently purchased a home from the original homeowner, and
yes.
I chatted with him during this recent round of storms that we had because I was concerned about the level of water in the ditch. And he explained to me that it was the first time in the 50 years he built the home that he saw the level of water that
there
high
you
in the
go.
Ditch. My question then is, should we put a halt to every subdivision that's currently right now in the planning stages in any area of town where that has occurred? Because that was pretty much the whole town, given that situation we faced a couple of weeks ago.
Well, we have to seek some serious expertise. Only Mother Nature knows how she's going to fight back, and the levels of flooding that could water flowing down the Lake Erie. We don't know. It wouldn't, to be honest, because I don't know what Mother Nature's got in store. And I know flood insurance is no fallback position. Nobody wants to submit a claim because their house is now wrecked.
I agree with you there.
I would say no until you have a pretty good idea of what the dimensions of structural water control devices need to be put in place, and you have the funds to actually pay for them.
Okay. And if I could, Madam Chair, I'm looking as part of our council agenda as an overhead, an aerial view of the proposed sites. So the Hazelwood Avenue untraveled road allowance, the subject property to the west of that. I see your home at 379 Willowwood coming down to Erie. And when I look at the wood habitat that is to the west of Hazelwood,
yes,
it's not hard to imagine that at one point that went all the way through your house to Willowwood.
Absolutely.
Do you think it's fair to restrict a property owner to develop a property or a parcel of property that they own that at one point in time the homeowner that owned your property was entitled to do?
Well, we have policy, but circumstances change. Attitudes change. Values change. At that time, when that house was built, and I believe 1992, I mean, that was the state of affairs at that time. We know better today. We know far better today. We'll know far better tomorrow.
Policies are based on attitudes of the day.
Correct.
If this developer was to follow all of the policies that we have in place today based on those attitudes, what would your opposition be to having this go forward?
Exactly the same. I do not believe that that one can predict, how Mother Nature and how rare species are going to find habitat. I can't predict those things. So what I do is, when I'm a retired professional accountant, conservatism. Don't do anything. You're not sure? Don't do anything.
I appreciate your comments and your honesty, and I can tell you I've been at that podium many times. It's not an enviable place to be if you're nervous, but you did very well tonight.
Thank you so much
for your comments and your opinion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other councillors? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I don't have any questions. I just want to make some comments. Mr. Merritt, thank you very much for coming up. I don't have any questions, but I just wanted to let you know that after reading the report over the weekend, I do have some concerns, and that will address some of the things that you brought up. And so I'll bring them up when the report's on the floor, and I'll be asking staff the questions. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Merrick. Our next presentation is by Dmitry Yakimov, Pursuit Developments Canada, Inc., Jens Knoth of Knoth Group, Inc., report number PDS 36-2017, regarding the request extension of draft plan approval for Hazelwood draft plan of subdivision. Mr. Yakimov, good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Just
state your name for the record.
My name is Dmitry Yakimov. I am the managing director of Pursuit Developments, a development company who has been which has been retained by Mr. Knopf and Nyacon, both of which are partners as of late in Hazelwood development, and I'm here to speak on their behalf. I'm in a similar position as the gentleman who just spoke in that matter, that I have been recently introduced to this project and has been given to my brought to my attention to move it forward. I was been made aware that it has enjoyed several extensions, and Mr. Knopf, due to the fact that he was absent from the country until about a few months ago, wasn't able to move it as fast and as far along as it was required. Hence, when he has come back from the warmer countries to resettle in Canada, he has asked for our assistance to move this project. And since it is fresh on my mind, I have prepared the speech, which I'll get to, but since it is very fresh on my mind what Mr. Jim has just spoken about, I would like to address some of your concerns or some of the concerns to the council that he has brought up as far as to the rigorous process that the town of Port Erie has already, rightly so, put this project through. And in the draft plan approval, as far as the recent events, the recent storms, the page, it doesn't say the page, but the point number 35 and 34 says, stormwater quantity control shall be implemented to attenuate post-development peak flows to the capacity of the downstream storm infrastructure for all storms up to and including the 100-year storm event. Now, when I met with the officials a few weeks ago to go over these points to discuss how to implement them as far as meeting the deadlines and ask for temporary draft plan extension, I did specifically ask about what does this mean, a 100-year storm? Does that mean we are to prepare better than the rest of the town for this one event that is going to drown the entire town, but our little piece of land is going to stay dry? That was my exact question to Matt Kernahan, to which the reply was, naturally, there are engineers, people who study this, the storms, and they know what would be the worst-case scenario that we have recently experienced, and they would approve the sizing of the pipes and such drainage and slopes as to alleviate this and make it as acceptable as possible. And all of these conditions that pertain to watershedding, conditions for the grading, conditions for the sediment and erosion, the conditions that require the subdivision agreement that they would go on title to the future owners of these properties to be maintained in the rightful state, would be approved by the region as well as the municipality. So as far as I'm concerned, the current standards that have been asked of Hazelwood Development are much more advanced than they were 10 years ago, or they were 20 years ago when warehouses being built, the subdivisions being were planned. So that is my response, expression in my mind to what was said. Additionally, I would like to say that Knopf Group has entered into joint venture agreement with Nyacon Limited. I have attachments of the Nyacon's portfolio, and Pursuit Developments Canada to complete the proposed development as planned in the draft plan approval. In the past several years, this project did experience some delays. However, I'm pleased to tell you that the work to complete the project is fully underway by myself and Nyacon Group. We're here to seek your approval to facilitate a speedy and timely progression of the development. I have recently met with Matt Kernahan and Daryl Vanderveen to discuss the outstanding conditions of the draft plan approval. To spearhead their timely completion, we went through all 38 of them, and I have already addressed several. Upon reviewing these conditions, I have already retained geotechnical engineers, site plan and engineer for grade and storm management from Halix Group, the archaeological from archaeologists from St. Catharines, and the new architectural firm, Emilio Raimondo Architects, to start work on the revamping and improving of the design. However, we do require your approval for extension on this project so I can enter into a full contract with mentioned individuals in order for us to progress working on alleviating all of the 38 conditions that are outlined in here. Our goal is very simple. If you look at my resume, I have been involved in much as positive development as well as one of very negative ones in LA Lake. I wasn't going to mention, and the developer asked me not to mention it, but since we have this conversation, I do have to state because it speaks to the character of what we do. In LA Lake, I have warned repeatedly about a possibility of a mall collapse. I've warned the town, the officials, and the owner of the mall. All of that fell on deaf ear until people perished. I'm now a star witness for the prosecution against people who are being prosecuted in this thing, and I can tell you 100% that integrity at our very heart of what we do. We're not going to cut the corners. Our goal is to make this development, it is very simple development. Yes, it's only 12 townhouses for the phase one. Hopefully we're looking at phase two in the future or whatnot, however that works out. But this phase one, we're going to do to the best of our integrity and the best of the ability of the current regulations, of the current best practices in construction. Niacon Limited has enjoyed a very long and distinguished career with many pages of projects, including multi-million projects like being Hilton Hotel. We are looking at Ellicottville Village for residential. We are looking at Prince of Wales Hotel in Niagara on the Lake, and many, many others where they have distinguished themselves with very good work and very good reputation. So I'm here to tell you, we are not going to let anybody down, including Mr. Knopf, who is sitting over there. We are going to complete this project to the best of our abilities and the highest standards. Our priority is being the well-being of community and the integrity of work. Together with Niacon, we will bring our knowledge and extensive experience to this beautiful project, and we'll complete it on time, this time. Thank you. Somebody asked me for the minutes that I was going to give.
Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Yakimov. Does any member of council have any questions? Can you stay at the podium, please? Thanks. Worship?
Yep. Thank you very much, Mr. Yakimov. I wonder if you could clarify this for me. The letter from Mr. Knopf refers to phase one, 12 townhomes, townhome apartments. That appears to be the whole development.
That is at the moment, yes.
So what's phase two?
Something we have been talking about, perhaps in the future, upon the successful completion of phase one, there are other pieces of land that Knopf Group owns that we would work with him on to develop them at a later date pending the successful completion of phase one. We're not currently aware of what it is going to be because we have to complete this first project, but in our joint venture agreement, we're not agreeing to just one project. We're looking at a long-term relationship with Knopf Group to develop more of the lands that they own that have been currently zoned residential or commercial, depending on whatever property is suitable.
Madam Chair, so there's no adjacent land that would constitute phase two of this development?
At this point, no land specifically is mentioned or have been decided on. Like I said, we have Mr. Knopf owns several of them, so we're looking at all of them, depending which one is going to be available and being approved. That's the one we're going to do.
Let me be more direct, if I might, Madam Chair. Does Mr. Knopf own land immediately to the north of this parcel?
Yes, he does.
Then I'd like to ask the next question. Does this development presume that Hazelwood Avenue is going to be opened?
if the road allowance that the town currently owns will open it right through, that naturally may open the future developments, yes.
What about with respect to this specific 12 townhouse apartment project? Hazelwood is being opened at least to the extent of that development?
It would have to be, yes. We are looking at mitigating, well, I cannot speak ahead of time because we haven't been given any additional information to what we would like to do. We perhaps would consider changing the planning, but that would require a whole new approval and draft plan approval from the town. Right now, we would like to proceed the way it is, with the road allowance where it is adjacent to the properties on the right and Hazelwood being to the left, adjacent to the wetlands. There's a swell, and then there's wetlands to the left or to the west of the properties. That's the way we're proceeding right now. What is going to happen in the future, I honestly cannot speak to. My goal is to get this finished.
Okay, now I'm getting moderately confused. You'll have to unconfuse me. Did you say that there's some contemplation about changing this plan? Did you say that?
I said we will consider that if it's necessary, according to your comments, whatever the council would approve. Yes, we will consider whatever needs to be done. But at this point, we're forging ahead with what it is, because that is what has been approved, that is acceptable to us and Mr. Knopf, and we would like to proceed with it.
One final question, if I may, Madam Chair. You gave a list of specialists with respect to geotechnical and some other things. Have any of them been formally retained yet?
Until I get the draft plan approval, I cannot, but I have already approached them, and they've given us preliminary quotations, but I cannot sign contracts with them pending the approval of this extension.
Okay, just to summarize, new owners, new consultant, that's you.
Correct.
That's what's changed since 2015.
And I have approached, the ones that I've mentioned in the minutes of the meeting. The Helix Group has been approached. Emilia Raimondo has been approached. I cannot pronounce the last name of the archaeologist from St. Catharines, and his first name is John. He has been approached. They are well aware of these projects. They have given me an indication of the financial obligation we would be under and timelines. In order for me to ink the deals with them, I would need your approval so I can make a commitment to them in turn.
And there has been, sorry, Madam Chair, there has been a change in ownership.
Yes. Yeah. It's in the process with the lawyers, I should say. Everything's been forwarded to them. They would speak better, but as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Okay, well, I am a lawyer, and I have some understanding of whether there's a change in ownership or it's in the process. So
okay, then I will answer that. I apologize. I will answer as far as I know. Everything's been forwarded to Broderick & Partners in Niagara Falls, and they're working on it. As to the current state of it, perhaps Mr. Knopf can answer better than I do because I'm not the owner.
I'd like that.
Okay. Mr. Knopf, would you be able to come to the podium to answer that question?
Currently, hello, everyone. The ownership is still under my name currently. But as was mentioned by Dimitri, all the information has been forwarded to the lawyers to complete the cooperative agreement between myself, Knopf Group Inc., and Niacon Construction. So
okay, that's fine.
They have it. It hasn't been signed, but we asked him to prepare it and get it ready for signing. So
okay, so then. For clarity, you're the original owner.
Correct.
Who brought forward the plan of subdivision.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other members of council have any questions or comments? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your additional explanations tonight. Based on everything you've said, and I'm sure you mentioned it a couple times in your presentation, but I just want to be clear and hear it kind of concisely, is the one-year extension enough time to alleviate all of the concerns that are still outstanding?
The way they stand right now, yes. Unless there's different added than the way it is right now, yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm just going through this, and I'm looking at Appendix 1, which you probably don't have in front of you, but I'm a little confused as to access to the subject property. I see there's a small portion of it, the frontage on Erie Road, which would give you access to the frontage on Erie Road, but how are you going to access the units? Are you opening Hazelwood?
According to this draft plan approval, we have to open Hazelwood Avenue.
Okay, all right, okay.
I wonder if Mr. Brady would be able to pipe in.
Certainly. Draft plan approval presupposes that Hazelwood Avenue will be opened and it will be built to our standards as a part of the development.
And so what I'm seeing here, it's going to be open just to Glen Olden Lane, and then any future development would have to come after that.
That's correct.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation this evening, Mr. Yakimov.
Thank you, guys.
That brings us to reports, PDS-36-2017, extension of draft plan approval for the Hazelwood draft plan of subdivision, west side of Hazelwood Avenue, north of Erie Road, rolled numbers 27030200017 38700 0000 and 27030020017 37000 0000 Genoth and Knopf Group Inc. owner Pursuit Developments Inc. is the agent. Can I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Zanko. That report is now on the floor. Any comments or questions? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question through you to staff on page 3 of the report, and it's just speaking to NPCA conditions. And I'm just hoping somebody can point me in the right direction here. One paragraph says that the NPCA has commented that draft approval should be deleted and replaced with a new condition that requires an updated scoped EIS. But then one paragraph later, it says both Niagara Region and the NPCA state in their comments that the EIS completed in 2006 for Hazelwood subdivision addressed the significant woodlot on the subject lands. Just wondering, what exactly is the position of the NPCA, and what is the difference necessarily between a new EIS as far as time frame goes, and is that what the NPCA is asking for, or the comment that appears later on, which is just an update to the EIS to address legislative requirements? Can you just clarify exactly who's asking for what?
Mr. Brady, can you clarify that, please?
Certainly. The Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority are asking that the EIS that was completed in 2006 be updated because of the passage of time. What we're pointed out to them and to you is that Section 7C1 of the Regional Official Plan states that the region's core natural heritage policies do not apply when a plan of subdivision was approved prior to the adoption of that policy. This particular plan of subdivision was approved prior to that policy. So from a policy perspective, the NPCA is not does not have the policy basis to ask for this update. And in terms of the amount of time it would take someplace between 6 months and a year prior to the EIS being updated and completed. The time frames that we're dealing with the Conservation Authority on scoped EISs at the present time is approximately a year.
Thank you for that, Mr. Brady. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could, a further question to Mr. Brady. The consultant on behalf of the proponent has stated that 1 year would be enough to alleviate any of the outstanding conditions. I'm assuming, because planning staff is recommending the 1 year extension, that that is planning's opinion as well, that this could be wrapped up in its current state within the 1 year? Or do you expect a reason that we would be back deliberating this again in 12 months?
Mr. Brady?
Based on the conditions that are here, the current conditions, that's without any change being made to Condition 31, and with a consultant on board that knows how to move through the process, and I believe that is now the case in this particular subdivision, there should be no reason for why within 1 year's time this subdivision shouldn't be registered. Now, built is different, but registered, and by it being registered, then it has met the 1 year time frame.
Okay. Thank you for that, Mr. Brady. I will give up the floor to hear comments from my colleagues. At this point, you know, if I did approve the 1 year extension, I definitely don't see myself approving another one 12 months from now, and that's just for the benefit of the applicant going forward, but at this point, we'll wait and see how it shakes out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Your Worship.
Just a couple of questions, and I'm wondering if we could get some comment about whether there's a distinction between an approved plan of subdivision and a draft approved plan of subdivision.
Mr. Brady?
An approved plan of subdivision is a draft approved plan of subdivision. That's the approval for a plan of subdivision occurs at the draft stage. When a plan is registered, it's not approved at that point. It becomes registered.
So now we're in a, this developer was going to proceed within the time frames allotted, then there'd be no question that environmental policies that might otherwise apply wouldn't apply. That's the essence of the provision, isn't it?
Yes.
But now the developer hasn't met the timelines and is seeking an extension, and we're at liberty to alter conditions, or any agency is entitled to request additional or altered conditions. Correct.
Certainly, the town council is in the can alter the conditions at this point in time. It's my position that the conservation authority does not have the policy basis to ask for the change in the condition that they've done. So that therefore they should not have done it, and that and we've brought that up with the region, that the region has provided to the conservation authority the ability to determine this, and we've asked the region to take a position on it, which they have not done.
If I might, Madam Chair, your position then is based on your interpretation of Section 7C1 of the regional official plan?
Correct.
So if a, as we've been told, the access to these units would be through the opening of Hazelwood north from Erie Road?
Mr. Brady?
Yes, that's correct.
And if council were to consider not granting the extension, what relief would be available to the developer, Chair?
Mr. Brady?
If the council determined that they would not grant an extension to the draft plan condition, I don't believe that that's appealable to the Ontario Municipal Board. I believe it's final.
So if I might, just what's going through my mind, Madam Chair, we don't specifically recall what the nature of the debate was 2 years ago, but I'm thinking that if we warned the developer that something would have to be done over the subsequent 2 years, or council might not further extend this, we must have had some discussion about this. We must have had some concerns about the number of extensions that have been granted. And here we are 2 years later, 2 years and a month later, and basically the only thing that's happened is, as far as I can ascertain, is that there's been a change in ownership. The owner has finally determined that this is a project that is best undertaken by someone else, and that someone else has retained consultant to get the ball rolling. That's what I think's happened in 2 years. And it could very well be that the ball will get rolling. I do tend to agree that the state of environmental legislation in 2006 was different than it is now. And I don't propose to undercut the owner of this property or prevent extension, but I do believe that I would prefer to have the EIS, simply because I don't know what's in there. Maybe there's nothing in there. Wetland to the west, maybe that's where all the wildlife is, and maybe that's where they should be. But that's what I'm, that's what I've got in mind, Councillor Passero. This has been extended a number of times. There's really been no activity in 2 years, and I think it's a fair request. Not going to pull the rug out from underneath the developer. That's necessarily fair on the one hand. On the other hand, I don't think it's necessarily unfair that we simply say, great, proceed without doing anything further to accommodate at least one agency. And, you know, I appreciate Mr. Brady's interpretation of the region's official plan. He may be right on this, but we're now having a developer in front of us requesting us to do something. And I don't think it's unreasonable for us to be requesting that he do something. So that would be, that's my view on this. We have taken a position as a council that we will value the natural heritage features of our community. I wasn't on council in 2007. This may be something that's going to be, an EIS might easily be responded to, and it may provide no further impediments to the developer. That can go on while the other things are being done to get this development moving forward, but that's where I'm sitting right now.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. First, a couple of comments on some of the things that have been discussed. Over the past few years, I have read a lot of different acts, and Species at Risk Act is one of them. Land Titles Act is some of the other ones, and a variety of different acts. And some of the acts in the beginning, or somewhere in the beginning of the wording, it always states that if there's any other act that conflicts or disagrees with this act, this is the act that we follow. And I guess my first question is, Mr. Merrick, he made a comment about EISs having to be updated every 4 years or 5 years. And I'm just wondering if staff... I understand if that's the way it's written, does official plans override the fact that EISs need to be updated every 4 years?
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councilor Lubert. The notion that EISs should be updated every 5 years, as expressed by Mr. Merrick, I don't believe is in any policy document that's ever been brought to my attention. Certainly, EISs do have a shelf life, and it's important to determine whether or not that shelf life has been surpassed. However, the policy that was put in the regional plan was there for a specific purpose, and it did provide a clear direction in terms of dealing with the natural heritage policies. I believe at the time that 7C1 was put in the plan that this was a compromise that had been worked out by the region with the development industry in Niagara. And it continues to be the policy framework.
Okay, thank you very much. And just another comment. Mayor Redekop, you asked Mr. Merritt if he had noticed bats in his neighborhood. And I lived on Willowwood Avenue for 16 years, and I can tell you that for many summers we would sit in the backyard and wait for it to just before it got dark, and we would sit in our chairs and literally watch a show of bats flying around the area. It was tremendous, the amount of bats that used to fly there, and we look forward to it in the evenings, nice and calm, and watch the bats go through the area. If you look at the area, there's lots of trees and everything there, lots of mosquitoes, lots of bugs. And when the bats disappear, that'll be the next complaint from the residents that we now have to go in and do something about the bugs in the area. But I just wanted you to know that, yes, there are lots of bats in that area, from my experience. But getting back to the report, on page 5 of the report, page 4, regional municipality, the comments from the region, the second paragraph right near the end, the last sentence, region staff state that the NPCA should be consulted on the request for an extension of draft plan approval with respect to the significant woodland. And if the original EIS remains satisfactory to the NPCA requirements. So Mr. Brady is stating that the NPCA doesn't have any policy basis to make the recommendation for an updated EIS, but they were instructed by the region to look to see if it's, if they're still satisfied with it, with the EIS. And it's quite obvious that the NPCA isn't satisfied because the species at risk. There's a number of bats, species of bats, that have just been identified as endangered. And I guess my question would be, looking at Section C1, which I had read, and I read Section A and Section B, I don't recall reading anything about when the species at risk or if a species becomes endangered that Section A and Section B are still exempt. And I'm not sure that the region's official plan can override a Species at Risk Act. I'm just wondering if staff could comment on that.
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councilor Lubberts. First of all, no species at risk has been identified by the Conservation Authority nor the region. They have said that there may be there, but they have not provided any records to that effect. And we've asked, but they have not provided any. So they think that they may be there, but they're not sure if they're there. So you're right. If there is a species at risk that is, it's a provincial issue, and if the Conservation Authority has the information that there is in fact a species at risk, it would override the regional official plan. At this moment in time, no one has that information. They're hoping that the updated EIS would actually provide them with that information, whether they would find that there is a species at risk there or that there isn't a species at risk there. But as I've said on a couple occasions, the 7C1 provides the policy basis for when the core area natural heritage policy should or should not be addressed. That's the policy basis that was put in place, and it was a compromise. And until such time as the region sees fit to update their natural area policies, which I understand from discussions with them they'll probably be doing in 2018, the policy is what the policy is, and I feel obliged to follow the policy.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Brady. As far as not identifying species at risk, I can tell you, as a former resident, there are bats in that area. In fact, I'd be willing to testify under oath that there's bats in that area. And I can understand what you're saying. You're saying we went back to the region and asked the region for comments, and the region can't provide you with that because they don't know. Well, you're getting it from a counselor that yes, there are bats there. So if something needs to be updated, I'm sure that we need to know what we have before we move forward. And just to say that we're not going to, we don't recommend a change because NPCA doesn't have a policy basis. I think the region has a policy basis, and they instructed the NPCA to take a look at it. And so at this point, what I would like to do is put a motion forward to defer this until we get some comment, council gets the comments from NPCA, further comments from NPCA, and further comments from the region regarding the official plan, Section 7 of their official plan, and comments on the species at risk.
Councillor Lerberts, just to interrupt for a moment, Mayor Radicop was going to put an amendment to the existing report, so we were going to go to him first. And I think that would cover the basis of your, because you are asking for a new updated environmental, so I think that would cover the basis that you're looking for.
Well, I guess, yeah, we can do that. Well, then again, we're going to have to defer this until we get that, so.
We wouldn't be deferring the report. We'd be making an amendment to the existing report to include an environmental, an updated environmental. So that would make no sense to defer this report if we're asking for that. And that was the statement that Mayor Rutterkopf had made prior to my allowing you to speak.
So what I'm going to do is send it back to your worship so that you can amend this report.
Are you, Madam Chair, are you saying that I don't have the floor anymore?
Can I just speak up? I would suggest that your concern seems to be about the environmental impact study.
Yes, and now my concern is the fact that you want to bring forward an amendment to the motion, and if you make the amendment, I think Mr. Merrick, before he left, he was asking for counsel to give him extra time to do more research on his, end, so that he could bring some more information forward. So hoping that everybody wants to work together, then maybe Mr. Merrick can have more
Rubric,
time,
can
and we can defer it, and at the same time, everyone knows that the impact study is going to have to be done.
Right. We can put your motion to defer on the floor right now. So if you'd like to move that motion.
Yeah, and I'll put that motion on the floor.
I have a seconder for that.
You don't need a seconder, I don't think.
I apologize. So the motion to defer is on the floor. All those in favor? All those opposed? The motion is denied. Back to you, Your Worship. Oh, Councillor... Yes, would you like to speak?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you, I just had a couple questions to Mr. Brady. Under the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority, on page 4 of the report, the first paragraph states that the Bay Beach area drain, a municipal drain that's regulated by the MPCA, was originally addressed with the subdivision application. There's no time frame attached to that comment. Can you provide when the original application or this updated application came through, just so that we have an idea? Was this originally done in 2006 and the MPCA is saying, yep, that's still fine, or was this done more recently?
Mr. Brady?
To my knowledge, it was done in 2006 and the MPCA believed that it's still appropriate.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brady. And again, just in paragraph 3, it says that the conditions 19, 33, and 34, which specifically pertain to stormwater management, which is one of the major concerns that Mr. Merrick raised tonight, that they continue to reflect their position being that no changes to the conditions of the stormwater management plan are necessary, and that they feel that any runoff or water has been properly addressed and mitigated by the subdivision agreement. Is that correct?
Sort of. Let me just back up a touch. There are conditions in the draft plan of subdivision which will address the stormwater management, both quantity and quality, and the work has to be done by the developer as part of that, which will then be cleared by both the Conservation Authority, the town, and the region. So they're satisfied that the framework that we have in place for dealing with stormwater management is sufficient, and it doesn't need to be changed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one further, I guess, comment, and Mr. Brady can feel free to chime in. Recently, it's been the town's policy to ensure that servicing is done to mitigate stormwater as we prior to the subdivisions being built. Is that not kind of our position, or has been our I noticed that several of the subdivisions that are coming online do have their servicing in prior to any of the actual work being done. Is that correct?
The town of Fort Erie takes this position that before any houses will be put in place, that we expect that the stormwater management system will be in place, plus the sewers and the water lines, so that the homes, as they are connected, will be able to be fully functioning. The a plan of subdivision can be registered without having all of that in place if the developer wishes to do so, but in those circumstances, we take letters of credit to ensure that the work is done prior to any houses being put on the property.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just from what you described, I would take it that that would also assist other residents around the development to ensure that their property is not getting excess water from the developments pushed onto it.
That's correct.
Thank you. No further questions, Mr. Brady. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady. What is the cost to the developer for a new EIS?
Brady?
Not a biologist, but I can, from my years of experience in consulting, I can tell you that this EIS probably is in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000. I don't think it's the cost that the developer is so worried about. It's the fact that the EIS will take at least 6 months to a year to complete. And with a one-year time extension, I don't believe that with that condition that they'll be able to meet all the tests.
Thank you.
Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to pick up on Mr. Brady's last comment and using my crystal ball to forecast what the amendment the mayor is going to make, if we do go forward with an EIS, is there anything that precludes us from making this from a one-year to a two-year extension?
No, there's nothing that precludes you from doing that.
Okay. Thank you.
Then in that case, Your Worship, would you like to bring that amendment up?
I would, Madam Chair. I'd like to amend the recommendation to read, the council extends draft plan approval for the Hazelwood draft plan of subdivision located at the west side of Hazelwood Avenue, north of Erie Road, until April 5th, 2019, with revision of condition 31 to require an update of the EIS scoped as required by the NPCA and the owner and regional municipality of Niagara Planning and Development Services Department be so advised. So, two-year extension of draft approval with a scoped EIS being required.
Okay. That amendment is on the floor. So that amendment is on the floor. Would anybody like to ask any questions with respect to that? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if the environmental impact study is going to be asked for, and if we do approve this, I'm not hearing anything as to our environmental advisory committee being notified or asked to comment, and I'm wondering if Mayor Redekop would accept a friendly amendment to include our advisory committee.
I have Mr. Brady speak to that first. Thank you.
Thank you. When an EIS is prepared or EIS is updated, it's the custom of the planning department to involve the Environmental Advisory Committee. But if the if that's added to the amendment, that's fine.
Well, I guess it wouldn't hurt to add it to it. I'm just asking Mayor Redekop if he'd be willing to accept a friendly amendment.
So we would add that to the end, that they be notified as well. But at the end, where it indicates that we would so notify the regional planning department, we would add the environmental advisory committee as well.
Would anyone else like to speak to the amendment? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am the last person who ever wants to put another item on a checklist for a developer. I think that's pretty clear for anybody who's watched me in this seat. But sometimes when you take too long to do things, situations change. And I think this is one of those situations. I recognize the reasons why the developer wouldn't want to go down this road, but I think that this is a compromise. And I think by us allowing the 2 years allows time to fulfill that compromise. We were cautioned by staff 2 years ago when we granted that 2 year extension that if we had not seen significant progress now, not to do any more. And I have not seen that significant progress. So I think the developer should be leaving here happy that we are not bringing this to a complete standstill. And I think this recognizes the concerns of the individuals in the surrounding neighborhood. Councillor Nutt clarified that any of the drainage concerns are going to be addressed. I think that if the developer follows this process through to completion, I don't see any reason why I would not be in a position or council would not be in a position 2 years from now to vote in favor of moving forward with this. I recognize some of the concerns that were brought forward earlier by the delegate. I don't think any of them are insurmountable if the developer follows this process. So I'll be supporting the amendment on the floor and then the report as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments or question with respect to the amendment? Would any councillor like to have the amendment reread? Then I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. The report as amended is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call that question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. That moves us on to the next report, which is PDS-39-2017, Proposed Zoning Bylaw Amendment 3303 Dominion Road, Alan Haywood, Agent, Roy Berry, Owner, Marcello Petrella, and Frank Renda are applicants. That, can I have a mover for Lubritz? Are there any comments or questions with respect to this report? Councillor Lubritz?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm glad to see that this year came forward, and there was some discussion with the seller, Mr. Berry, and he has agreed to go forward with everything. And I just need some clarification. My concern when this first came forward was that the town wouldn't get dragged into any legal battles between purchasers and sellers and with the real estate. And is that being confirmed by staff that we're at no risk of liability,
Mr. Brady?
Now that Mr. Berry has made his comments,
Mr. Brady, can you answer that question for us, please?
Certainly. As council had directed, we met with our own legal counsel, and legal counsel said, it's really up to Mr. Berry. I suggest that you meet with Mr. Berry. I personally met with Mr. Berry with other staff members. I asked Mr. Berry whether or not he wanted the matter to go forward, and he said yes, he did. I asked him whether he had spoken to his legal counsel on this. He said yes, he had. And I asked him whether or not he had spoken to his real estate people, and he said yes, he had. He had two of them with him. And I said, that's fine, then we'll be moving forward in that respect. On the issue of can anybody sue the town about something, they can always do whatever they feel that they wish to do, but I believe that we've done our due diligence in terms of securing that the person who applied for the matter still and owns the land still wants the land to be rezoned.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Brady. And yeah, I understand what you're saying about people suing. Anybody can be sued. I know about that personally. But we have basically minimized our exposure by working with Mr. Berry and consulting with our legal counsel. So I'm happy with the way things have turned out, and I see no reason to support the report. Thank you.
Any other councillors? Councillor Nutt?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some comments. After this came forward, it didn't really, sit right. So I'm glad we deferred it because we did have some time. I had some conversation with the CAO around this. The fact that the land's not severed at all, really, at this point, makes a de facto agreement non-existent between the second party involved and so they really have no grounds at all because the land's not severed. It's all one parcel. So if Mr. Berry wishes to move it forward, I'll be supporting his request based on that the land's not severed yet. And until it is, those people with the second agreement really have no standing on the land. So I just wanted to thank Mr. Cookett for his research and on that.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments, Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was not in attendance that night. I did reach out to one of the real estate representatives of Mr. Berry to get some clarification because I did listen to the council meeting on audio. That's what I do when I can't sleep at night. And I'm satisfied with the direction that this is taking at the present moment. So I'll be voting in favor of this.
Any other councillors? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? All those opposed? Motion carried. That concludes Planning and Development Services.
Thank you very much, Councillor Butler. That takes us into Corporate and Community Services. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is currently open. Tonight we have a presentation delegation by Christine Carmichael, Director of Corporate and Customer Services, Canadian Niagara Power. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening. Now, I didn't bring my presentation. Is it on here, or do I? Oh, thank you.
Mr. Davis will be more than happy to help you with that.
Very much. Good evening, Mayor Redekop, members of City Council, other guests, and residents of Fort Erie. I'm Christine Carmichael. I'm the Director of Corporate and Customer Services at Niagara Power. I'm here with my two colleagues, John Sander, the Manager of Customer Engagement, and Greg Behariel, the Manager of Regulatory. We wanted to have an opportunity to give Council an update on our 2016. So just to give you some background, in early 2016, we filed a cost of service rate application with the Ontario Energy Board, and there were multiple phases to the process. But our rates were approved in May 1st, 2017, and they're retroactive back to January 1st, 2017 through a one-year rate rider. So just to give you some context, it's every 5 years that Canadian Niagara Power has to go in and rebase its distribution rates through a full cost of service rate application and hearing with the Ontario Energy Board. So the next time we do this, it'll be 2022. In the years that we don't rebase, the distribution rates increase by like an inflation less a productivity and a stretch factor. So in 2016, our distribution rates increased by 1.65%, and in 2015, by 1.15%. So the application that I'm talking about is for Canadian Niagara Power, but I just want to put it in context. It's not just Fort Erie. It's Fort Erie and Port Colborne, so that's the Niagara component of it. That's about 24,000 customers, and as well Eastern Ontario Power, which serves approximately 3,600 customers in Gananoque. So while I'll try to be as specific as I can to Fort Erie, some of the numbers would be Canadian Niagara Power in total because I can't break them all out. Just to give you an idea of how we listen to our customers, when we're doing a rate application as well, we do an annual customer survey each year. It's a telephone survey. We've been doing that for about 15 years or so. This year we conducted, or last year for the rate application, we conducted focus groups with our customers to get their feedback on our distribution system plan and our rate application. We're very involved with our community. We do dinners at the Salvation Army. We're involved in the parades. We're big supporters of the United Way. We're going to be in the Corporate Challenge this year. Hope to see some of you there. We have a call center with very knowledgeable staff and resources, and we are on social media now. You can follow us on Twitter at CNP Power and on Facebook. And when we do update, social media leaks right to our website. So if customers aren't on social media, they can get the same information, the tweets, right on our website. So this is all part of our customer engagement strategy, that we reach out to our customers to gather information and feedback. And our survey results this year, our overall customer satisfaction rating was 85%. Now that was down from the year before, but the entire industry was down. We did our survey in November. In November, you know, the cost of power was in the media. We're not going to change when we do our survey. We did it at the same time. Our survey dropped, I think, about 6%, which was less than what the province of Ontario, the satisfaction rating dropped by more than that. So we were pleased that we dropped less. Unfortunately, we did drop, and we'll try to get that back up. But sometimes it's just the nature of what. And every year we do report to the Ontario Energy Board. We have a scorecard that reports a number of different measurables, like service quality, our customer satisfaction we report every year, our safety statistics, reliability, and cost control. So that's available for all of our customers, for everybody to see. It's on our website, and it's also on the Ontario Energy Board's website. So, and it talks to if we're tracking up or down or if we're meeting the benchmark. So it's good information that's out there. When we talk about our electricity bill, there's a number of different components. And the part that I'm talking to you about right now is the CMP distribution charge. So that represents, says 23%, but it's 18 to 23% depending on the bill. The rest of the items on our bill are pass-through items. So they are items that Canadian Niagara Power collects and we remit. We remit to the independent electricity system operator, we remit to the government, we remit to transmitters. So I just wanted to clarify that the part that I'm talking to you about today is the small distribution charges part. And if you're familiar with your bill, there's a delivery charges line item. That's only a part of that line item. So we have to present in a certain way. We're mandated to do that. But just so you understand that this is the component of the bill that I'm talking to you guys about. So I wanted to give you an idea of what the impact is going to be, because our customers, the rates are changing May 1st, and they're going to start getting their bills in early June, because we always bill a month behind. So if we look at the part that I'm talking to you about is the CMP base distribution rate charges. So you can see that the net change is $2.03 a month. So that's what we were approved for the Ontario Energy Board for a residential customer using an average using 750 kilowatt hours per month, an increase of $2.03. There's also rate riders, and there's a rate rider of $3.87 that's going. The rate rider of $3.87 includes $1.23, which is that foregone revenue, because the rates are retroactive back to January 1st, so that'll fall off the bills on December 31st, 2017. But there were other rate riders that came off the bill, and the transmission charges had gone down. So the total delivery charges line item on the bill is going to go up 58 cents a month. But as you can see, the regulatory charges and the electricity time of use charges are all going down. The government recently implemented the Fair Hydro Plan, and as a result, bills in Ontario are projected to decrease 25%. Now, they already went down 8% on January 1st with the Ontario rebate electricity credit, which is supposed to offset the HST component of the bill. So they already went down about $10 then. Now the cost of power went down on May the 1st. So that, as you can see, represents $10.40 decrease per month. So really bills have gone down $20 since January. And the government just released on Thursday the remainder of the Fair Hydro Plan, and so the rates are going to decrease further on July 1st. That's kind of off cycle because rates usually just change May 1st and November 1st. So on July 1st, they're going to go down again. Right now, I think we're at about 17% of the 25% that decrease, so that differential is going to come into effect in July. So customers so residential and small commercial customers are going to see a further decrease in July as well. So in the end, customers are going to see a decrease of residential customers of $11.24 a month. And the same story for general service customers in the less than 50 kilowatt customer class. Again, the distribution charges that we've applied for represent an increase of $4.56. They are offset by some rate riders that have gone down and the transmission charges that have gone down. So the total delivery charges line item for an average general service customer is going to go up $2.13. Again, the regulatory charges and the time of use charges are going to decrease. So the net impact for a customer in this rate category would be a decrease of $29.34 a month. And then again, they're going to see further decreases in July. So there is a rate rider as well in that 10.01 in the second column, $10.01. It includes a $5.08 rate rider for the foregone revenue that again will fall off at the end of December. There'll be other rate riders that come on and off though. They're for deferral accounts and disposition of global adjustment. So they go up and down. So I can't tell you what the rate riders will do at the end of the year, but that's what the average general service customer will see. So I just want to explain a little bit about what our rate application, what are we applying for, what expenditures are we doing. So it's broken up between capital and operating and maintenance. So it's about $10 million per year in each category. That's throughout Canadian Niagara Power, though. So again, that's Fort Erie, Port Colborne, and Gananoque. So what are our capital investments? There are our investments in our long-term assets, new poles, wires, transformers, others. And their OM&A, our day-to-day maintenance expenditures. We maintain our assets, of course, customer service, human resources like other departments, and tree trimming is also another expense I didn't have on the slide. So just to delve into a little bit into our capital plan, it's divided into four components: system renewal, system service, general plant, and system access. And system renewal is the biggest one, and that's replacing end-of-life assets, upgrading our stations, underground cables, overhead wires and poles, and that's the biggest component. As well, system access, or must-do projects that we must do, like new subdivisions or business customer connections. As well, general plant, our investments such as tools, vehicles and buildings, and our systems that we use to manage our financial and customer information. And then we have system service, which includes things like automated switches and improvements in our distribution system, like our monitoring equipment when we have outages to, you know, get information quicker and reduce the length of outages. So in our five-year plan, so that this rate application covers a five-year plan, what are some of the projects that we have for Fort Erie? We have some major voltage conversions, 4.8 kV delta to 4.3 kVY. So that represents one of the projects is $4.9 million in Fort Erie, which is north of the QEW, and $3.69 million in the Ridgeway area. New distribution substation, $1.7 million in Fort Erie, the south central area of Fort Erie. And then there's other distribution system upgrades, $6.17 million in Fort Erie, and then, of course, new subdivisions, and there have been. And in addition, we have $750,000, that's across, again, CMPI, but in distribution automation capital budgeted in the next 5 years. So these investments are aimed at improving response and restoration times under outage conditions. The other component of our rate application, so we've talked about the capital, is the operations, maintenance, and administration. So those are things like pole testing programs that we have. Right now there's the Emerald Ash Borer program that we're all familiar with. We had to implement missed meters, so customers that were in the greater than 50 kilowatt hour rate category that weren't on interval meters, typically use less than 250,000 kilowatt hours, we had to implement missed meters so they could have access to real-time information just like customers that are on intervals. So we've done that as well. So basically that's what comprises our rate application, and those are the expenditures that we go in and we put an application to the Ontario Energy Board, and they allow us to have a safe and reliable distribution system at prudent cost to our customers. And I wanted to close my presentation while just giving you a tidbit of information. I don't know if you all heard, we had a day, I think it was May the 6th, we gave out, through our Conservation Demand Management Department, we gave out free retractable clotheslines to the citizens, residents of Fort Erie. You had to have a residential account in your name. So we gave out 800 of them. So we have lots more. So if customers want to get them, they can come to our office. We're going to have some other events as well. We've had them in Port Colborne as well, and in Gananoque and up north in our St. Marie area as well. But it was very well received, and customers were very pleased to get their clothesline. So if you haven't gotten it, you can come to our office and get one, and you just need to bring ID. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Carmichael. Thank if you wouldn't mind staying at the sure. podium for any questions that any councillor may have or comments. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to see you again, Christine.
Nice to see you too.
Wanted to add to your list of community initiatives that CMP, we were also big providers for our energy park as well as the skateboard park many years ago, so we thank you for that. A question on the technical side, and I don't know if this is out of your area of expertise.
All right, hello,
gentlemen. A couple of years back, we had a very big project where we strung new lines across from the U.S. to Canada, or as we'd like to say, from Canada to the U.S., and we were told that that was going to give us a secondary access to power. And then at some point, a couple months ago, time flies by, maybe it was longer than that, maybe it was shorter than that, almost our entire town was out. What's the justification there? How can we have an entire town almost without electricity given that secondary source of power coming in?
I can start to answer it. Maybe Greg, you can jump in. But so there is definitely a secondary source to power, but it does take some time to implement that. So certainly I'm familiar with the date that you're referring to, and we were looking at if that is the option that we should do. We need to contact then, you know, National Grid on the on the U.S. side, and they would need to make arrangements. And so we had started to do that, started to look at what our options were. And in the meantime, though, we discovered what the problem was. And so at that point in time, we had to do, you know, what's the right thing to do in that situation? Well, okay, at that point in time, we knew the power was going to come back on within a couple hours, so it didn't make sense to invoke that. But there was another situation last year where we had to do some maintenance work on our transmission system. So in the past, and we had 8-hour outages in the town of Fort Erie, but what we did was we had time to plan that, and we made all the necessary arrangements, so we were able to switch the supply in 3 minutes. So we did all this advertising and said the power is going to be out to the entire town, and it was 3 minutes. And then it was 3 minutes to come back on. So it is there for us to use. In a situation like we experienced where we had a loss of supply, we will look at that. And if we knew that it was going to be for a long, extended period of time, we would invoke that process. But we have to really look at the timing of it and make sure it's the right decision, because certainly there's a whole process in place. But we do have that supply, so definitely.
I appreciate that. For my grandfather, who had just purchased pork chops, it was a long period of time.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you, Christine. I appreciate that explanation, because we fielded a lot of questions based on that, so I appreciate that answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Redekop?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Carmichael, for the information. Very knowledgeable as well about areas that are probably outside your core area of knowledge, I presume, but very well done. When you were talking about the bills and you made reference to rate riders and other distribution charges, I thought I heard the words global adjustment.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you did hear the words.
So residents of the town of Fort Erie and the businesses in the town of Fort Erie now contribute to the global adjustment charges, which at one point we didn't, primarily because we didn't, as a municipality, incur part of the Ontario Hydro debt because Canadian Niagara Power generated its own electricity.
Well, we didn't have to pay the debt retirement charge, but the global adjustment in Fort Erie, we've always had been subject to the global adjustment like the rest of the province. It was the debt retirement charge because we had the benefit of having our generation from our Rankin plant that we were exempt from the debt retirement charge, but right. Never from the global adjustment.
I don't believe the debt was ever paid off. I don't believe the debt has been completely paid off.
No, it hasn't. But actually, across the province, like low-volume consumers no longer pay the debt retirement charge.
So we pay the same charges as everybody else in Ontario.
Well, with the debt retirement charge, we were exempt for a period of time. Now the government has there's an exemption for low-volume consumers across the province, but high-volume consumers across the province still pay debt retirement charge, whereas in Fort Erie, we don't pay that.
So Fort Erie, high users still don't pay a debt reduction charge?
No, we're exempt.
That debt that was accumulated, that's still a separate account?
The government's
maintaining a separate account.
Yeah.
But nobody else in Ontario pays it except high users.
Yeah.
So we're no better off than everybody else, whether they live in Chatham or...
For residential?
Right.
For residential, it's the same. That's right. Now, we had the benefit, though, for many, many years of not paying the debt retirement charge.
Well, and I know this is not Canadian Niagara Power's fault. I'm not criticizing Canadian Niagara Power. But as long as that debt is outstanding and we're not getting any benefit, I think that there's an issue, not with you, with the provincial government. So it's interesting to see all this sleight of hand and how you're having to go through all of these gymnastics in order to break out the various components of your bill and reduce it by this amount because it went up that amount. And it's commendable on the part of Canadian Niagara Power and all service providers. It just strikes me as being a good, maybe an interesting policy 20 years ago, 25 years ago, that's somehow gotten lost in the weeds, but great presentation.
The chair will now recognize Councillor Zenko.
Thank you, Councillor Nat. Through you to Mrs. Carmichael. I wanted to thank you for your presentation as well. I know that oftentimes your CMP is kind of the bearer of bad news and a lot of things can't be controlled and are mandated by the province. So it's really helpful for constituents to have the breakdown of the different fees that they're paying, and this way they're not assuming that CNP is collecting all of these. I also wanted to mention that further to Councillor Passero's comment, when we did have the outage, CNP did an exceptional job with customer service. I think that I'd like to just offer kudos to you and your entire team because you constantly kept our community updated, and you kind of, I want to say, under-promised, over-delivered in my mind, because the power did in fact come on sooner than was posted. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll bring that back to my team.
Are there any other councillors who wish to ask any questions? I get to. Before you. I have to wait. Okay. Go ahead, Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Chair Nutz. Christine, you had mentioned in your presentation the Emerald Ash Borer, that there are funds set aside for CNP. Is there any assistance available to homeowners that have trees in proximity to power lines? How is that determined as to what CNP would come in and help to trim or remove, and what would be at the expense of the homeowner?
We would only trim the trees if they are within our, I don't know, is it 10 meters? Is it 10 feet from our line. So then those are the limits of approach. So we would trim the trees, or if we had to take them down, we would take them down. But we wouldn't, if they are within those parameters, we would take care of it. If they don't fall within those parameters, then it's not our core business. Like, it's not that we wouldn't be able to just to assist residents in removing their trees. But if they fall within our criteria, then we would.
Okay. Has CNP ever initiated some type of communication campaign through mailouts with the bill to advise residents that if they have trees in that situation to contact CNP?
We have in the past. We have, and it's on. We have a page dedicated to that on our website as well. But I can take that back. We put inserts in our bill, so maybe it's time that we communicated that, and that might be something that we could do. We also have a newsletter twice a year, so we might be able to add, and we just made it larger, so add a section on that. So I appreciate those comments. I'll bring them back.
That'd be great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Now to get to the tough questions.
Okay.
Your rate increases are going to equal about $8 million. You mentioned upgrades in your presentation. What are the costs of the upgrades?
Cost of the upgrades?
Yep.
The upgrades to, which upgrades are you referring to when I, the capital upgrades?
Yeah, your capital project upgrades.
Well, I said $10 million in upgrades per year, $10 million in capital per year, approximately, for CMPI. So that's 4084 Colburn and Gannon Aquin.
And not to belabor the mayor's point, he kind of stole my thunder with the global adjustment charge, but we all know the energy file in Ontario is ridiculously mismanaged, and you know, it's commendable to what CNP is doing. Understandably, that you have to pass through a lot of charges in that, and the proposed increases that you're proposing are right in line with inflation. So, you know, it's great to see that you're conscientious of the end user and the consumer on that level. Just I feel for you guys being between a rock and a hard place because of the mess that the province has made on the energy file, and this short-term fix of a decrease of 25%. Let's all face the facts. It's just because there's an election next year, and within 3 years, that debt retirement charge is going to come back and be incorporated into that green adjustment charge that they're talking about down the road on this file. So, you know, I just want to commend you guys on doing the best you can with the limited resources, but also that making people understand that you're making those capital investments to keep the grid, improve the service delivery. And again, just to reiterate Councillor Zenko's comments, staff is always pleasant, informative, and a pleasure to deal with at your organization. So thank you very much.
I appreciate that. And one thing we do, regardless of the price of electricity, is we do offer energy efficiency programs for our customers, all different rate categories. So we want customers to know that there's ways to reduce their consumption that ultimately will help manage their electricity bills or shift their time of use pricing. So we're always available to answer questions and give information and try to make that information available to our customers.
Thank you very much. And I know that Fort Erie has one of the larger seniors populations. It's always good to know that they can reach out for additional information, being that they're on fixed income. Seeing no other questions, thank you very much for coming tonight, and thank you for the presentation. We'll now move forward to 9.2 reports. Can I get a mover for COS? Thank you, Councillor Zenko, 04-2017, award of contract for Council Chambers audio-visual refurbishment. COS 17P-CCAV19. That report is on the floor for comment or question. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we still planning on at some point in the future during a televised meeting, I'm guessing, to get a further in-depth presentation for the benefit of the public as to what this project will entail?
I see Mr. Davis is in the audience. If it's okay with Mr. Cookett, we could have Mr. Davis come to the podium and just kind of give us a high-level, quick answer to Councillor Passero's question.
Sure. Do you want me to go through what we're proposing, or do you want me to answer the question of are we going to do something in the future?
I actually was going to ask you if you wouldn't mind just giving us the 50,000 view of what this entails, just for the people listening at home that might not have had time to read the report.
Absolutely. So I can't remember, a few years ago, we had put a budget item in for the refurbishment and replacement AV here in the council chamber. And as you can see in front of you now, we've come up with kind of a band-aid solution for some issues that we've come across, I guess, in the last year and a half. So we moved that budget item forward. That was a 2019 budget item. We moved it forward to this year. That was a $50,000 capital expense. The idea was to replace the guts of the system, which are essentially in the basement. And in speaking to some of the counselors and some of the staff members, we wanted to actually improve the system as opposed to just giving back what we have right now. So we came to council with another report requesting an additional $57,000, I believe it was, for improved services to the AV council. And that was approved. And that was looking at things like streamed video. We stream the audio now live, so streamed video. We were looking at improvements to the atrium as well, so better AV system in the atrium, especially when we have overflow, when we have items that people are interested in volume. We have people out in the atrium, so they can't see what's going on in here. So we're looking at new video out in the atrium that would allow us to broadcast the live stream out there. And then when we're not using it, we can also use it for other atrium presentations and so on. Excuse me. And we went through the RFP process, and coming back is basically what you see in front of you now. So the intention to get the work done over the summer when you have less of a schedule here in council, because I think we need the council chamber for about 2 weeks, scaffolding in here and so on.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Councillor Passero, do you have any follow-up questions?
No follow-up questions. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Just a comment, if I could, Mr. Chair. I'm looking forward to these improvements. I've been on that side of the horseshoe many, many, many times doing presentations or just observing, and I hope that people realize this is not going towards more comfy chairs for councillors and a wine fridge in the adjacent space next to me. I know Councillor McDermott is disappointed. No wine fridges. But this is to further engage or allow the engagement of people who attend council meetings. I know for many years I have asked for wider screens, something closer to the audience. You know, even tonight when Ms. Carmichael showed the report card, I couldn't read a single line of that on my monitor, and I'm 20 inches away. There's no way anybody could see that up there. And the live streaming capability for us to be able to do that in-house for every meeting. And I've said repeatedly, the majority of the decisions and decision-making and consultation and dialogue happens at council and committee meetings. It's not at regular council. Why Cogeco is here for regular council, of course, is for the presentations and the delegations, but really the nuts and bolts is at council and committee meetings. So for us to be able to add that to our repertoire of getting communication out and soliciting feedback back in, I think these improvements will go a long, long way to making sure that we're positioned going forward. We are already the beneficiaries of a pretty darn good council chamber and environment because I've been to a lot of the other council chambers, and I think this just ensures that we remain one step ahead of everybody else, and it's to the benefit of the public that we do that. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Are there any other questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Davis. Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor of the report? That passes. None opposed. Moving on to 9.3, are there any new business or inquiries? Your Worship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that council rules of procedure be waived in accordance with bylaw number 36-2016 to allow a motion for a resolution to be considered by council without notice. This is a motion relative to the fine entertainment stall policy. Excuse me, and I believe Councillor McDermott bring forward that motion if my motion passes.
Okay, so the mayor's motion to waive rules of procedure is on the floor. Any comments, Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are we looking to waive the notice provision first and then also waive the waiting period to have it come back? Is that all in cap? I'm hoping it is. I just want to make sure that that's what we're doing tonight so we can actually pass it this evening.
Yeah, so that it would, not only would there be no notice, but this would be a resolution. Typically in council and committee, we pass recommendations. Resolutions are in open council. This would be specifically a resolution.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no other comments or questions, I'll call the question. All those in favor of the mayor's resolution? None opposed? That passes. Councillor McDermott.
Thank you, Your Worship.
I'm promoted.
I didn't suspect that I would end up being here tonight doing this, but unfortunately, this is what we're doing. So the resolution has been by myself and seconded by Councillor Butler. Whereas there are two thoroughbred horse racing tracks in Ontario, Fort Erie Racetrack and Woodbine Racetrack. And whereas the Fort Erie Racetrack is one of the most attractive horse racing facilities in North America, has been operating continuously since 1897, hosts the Prince of Wales Stakes, which is the second jewel in the Canadian Triple Crown, is a business venue that provides a base for employment of more than 500 workers and has just experienced record-breaking back-to-back racing seasons. And whereas in recent years, Fort Erie Racetrack has been the primary host facility for the B Circuit for thoroughbred horse racing in Ontario, while Woodbine has been the primary host facility for the A Circuit. And whereas horse racing in Ontario is regulated by the Ontario Racing Commission, an agency of the provincial government, and whereas horse racing at both Fort Erie and Woodbine are subsidized either directly or indirectly by funding from the government, and whereas the provincial government has developed a strategy to grow and sustain horse racing in Ontario, and whereas Woodbine Entertainment, the operator of the Woodbine Horse Racetrack, has adopted a stall policy effective May 15, 2017 that provides that for the duration of an entire thoroughbred meeting of an applicable racing season, no horse once boarded at Woodbine may leave to race another racetrack more than once, excluding races with a purse of more than $20,000 during such period or be barred from stabling therefore after at Woodbine. And whereas the new Woodbine policy is more about eliminating competition from Fort Erie than growing or supporting the horse racing industry in Ontario, and whereas the impact of the new Woodbine stall policy would be devastating to the Fort Erie racetrack and the many owners, jockeys, trainers, and support staff who rely on horse racing and at Fort Erie, and is likely to detrimentally affect horse racing and breeding in Ontario, as owners choose to avoid the stall restrictions by stabling and racing in the United States. And whereas it is completely inappropriate for the Woodbine Entertainment to restrict the movement of thoroughbred racehorses in Ontario, expand its offering to races to include B-meet races, and attempt to limit competition in the thoroughbred horse racing industry in Ontario. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the Town of Fort Erie hereby requests the Ontario Racing Commission immediately to prohibit Woodbine Entertainment from continuing its new stall policy or implementing any policies that restrict the movement of racehorses in Ontario or expand racing at Woodbine to include B-class horses. In the absence of the Ontario Racing Commission taking any action as requested, the Council of the Town of Fort Erie requests that the Government of Ontario either to compel the Ontario Racing Commission to act alternatively, taking immediate action to prohibit Woodbine Entertainment from continuing its new stall policy and expanding its racing program to include B-horse races. The Council of the Town of Fort Erie requests a meeting with Kathleen Wynne, the Premier of Ontario, at her earliest convenience to discuss these matters. A copy of this resolution shall be forwarded to the Premier of Ontario, Kathleen Wynne, the Minister of Agriculture, Jeff Leal, the Minister of Finance, Charles Sousa, the Leader of Her Majesty's Loyal Opposition, Patrick Brown, the Leader of Ontario's New Democratic Party, Andrea Horvath, the head of the Ontario Racing Commission, the MPPs who represent ridings in Niagara, the chair of the region of Niagara, Alan Castlin, the mayor of Niagara Falls, Jim Diodati, and the local municipalities in Niagara for support. May I speak to this?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. So number one, let's start out with the fact that the Woodbine policy directly targets Fort Erie Racetrack. There was no consultation, no notice to Fort Erie. We received no notice from the Ontario Racing Commission. Back in 1997, the Ontario Jockey Club disposed of Fort Erie. They did not want Fort Erie to continue with an A meet, although they did kind of let us get the B horses. So there is a direct definition of what A horses and B horses are. And Woodbine Entertainment has crossed the line in this area. This is a fundamental shift in Ontario racing, in that it now establishes Woodbine as a B track. Stalling is unique and historical to thoroughbreds, and while wise management of that resource is prudent, the new Woodbine-centric proposal breaks all traditions of ship-ins, collaboration, and good business sense. There are only two thoroughbred racetracks in Ontario, Woodbine and Fort Erie, which has been running for the past 120 years. If left to stand in its present or even modified form, the policy by de facto restricts movement of racehorses. And this is nothing less than a predatory assault on racing at Fort Erie, on the economics of our horse people, on this significant historic tourism attraction in Niagara, and significantly attacks the economics of rural Ontario and the town of Fort Erie and the region of Niagara. Not only that, but it is truly a restriction of trade to bar people from going back and forth. We have been shipping horses back and forth from Woodbine for 36 years. What I don't understand is how Woodbine Entertainment is dictating what Fort Erie Racetrack does. Fact of the matter is, there is a clear line, A meet, B meet. Woodbine has a board of directors who get paid quite well. Fort Erie is a not-for-profit that work basically for free. Woodbine has every advantage of gaming, any gaming in the province of Ontario. They have that privilege. Yet they are subsidized by the government, just like we are. We get 40 days of racing and can barely survive on that. And I think over the years it's been the hope that we would just fold up and go away. But the fact of the matter is, Premier Wynne told us many months ago, she's reinventing horse racing. It wasn't exactly supposed to go this way. Left to stand, this would further cripple the recovery of horse racing, horse racing industry, in that it completely goes against the past 4 years of the new model for Ontario racing. This is not helpful, it is not collaborative, it's entirely self-serving, and it does considerable damage to the confidence that the Premier has been trying to engender in the racing and horse breeding industry. Fort Erie is a true not-for-profit community corporation. It maintains a vital economic foundation of Fort Erie. I would be very confident in stating that greater than 95% of the horses that leave Woodbine to race another track for under 20,000 are shipping to Fort Erie. The practice of horse stabling at Fort Erie and shipping at Woodbine to race, and those at Woodbine shipping to race at Fort Erie, like I said, has been going on for 35, 36 years. The Ontario Jockey Club, now Woodbine Entertainment, disposed of the racetrack back in 1997. Fort Erie rallied then to save the track, and we continue that mission every year. Our management team at the racetrack has been setting records and breaking annual key performance indicators since FELRC saved the Fort Erie racetrack with the help of the province when then the private sector owners were planning on closure. It is beyond my belief why we have 40 racing days. We are setting records during those 40 racing days, and the province of Ontario doesn't reward us for this. This is our reward. Our reward should be, here's 40 more racing days, keep up the good work and have at it. The entire racing industry in Ontario has been supported in its entirety since the advent of the slots program, and then subsequently to policy changes that were reversed in 2013 as a result of the cancellation of the SARP. By and with funds by the province, the greatest benefactor by far, or the financial support being none less than Woodbine. Through the Ontario Racing transition, the Ontario Racing Live, and now Ontario Racing Woodbine, has given more and more money from the province, more and more benefits such as all simulcast track and online wagering through the province and under the new Ontario Racing model are going to be paid to administer the Alliance of Tracks in its entirety. I think it's fair to say that it's a preemptive strike and completely contradictory to comments made by the Premier about the Ontario Horse Racing Alliance against Fort Erie in a simply selfish effort to create conditions that make Fort Erie economically non-viable before it can take its rightful place at the Alliance table. I'm not going to go on and on and on, but I will say this, that Fort Erie Racetrack is going to open this year on May 30th, and it's going to have 40 days of racing come hell or high water. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to hold the province responsible to the promise that it makes with regards to racing in Ontario. There are two tracks, bound by definition, A and B, and we have to keep it that way. Woodbine, like I said, every advantage in the world, and they still want more. In fact, their wanting more is going to hurt, or at least attempt to hurt, the casino in Niagara Falls. So we have one thing in common with Woodbine, Niagara Falls and us. They could lose a casino, and we could lose our racetrack. And then the world will be all happier that the center of the universe of Toronto is the only place for horse racing in Ontario. I think we have to stand up for the little guy. The little guy is the one, the porters, the security guards, the hot walkers, the horsemen that are just trying to get along. There are six to 12 horses in some of these barns. The little guys. These aren't the big guys with $100,000 horses. These are the B meat horses that belong at the B meat in Fort Erie. And how the province of Ontario allows Woodbine Entertainment, who really is the fox in the hen house here, holding all the cards, dictating the whole the pace, and the minister tells us that he's not heard of this before. Well, he's heard of it now, and he's supposed to get back to us very shortly from when he told Wayne Gates in Parliament. I hope very shortly is right now, because every $5,000 race we lose to Woodbine is a stake in the heart of our racetrack. So I'm going to leave it at that. We all know what it is, and I appreciate any comments that come forward.
Thank you. The chair will recognize Councillor Butler.
Oops. Thank you, Chair Nutt. I'd like to, first of all, thank the mayor for bringing up the motion so that Councillor McDermott could actually bring this motion to light. It's very timely, and your words are very, very powerful, and I think it strikes a chord with a lot of people in the town of Fort Erie and certainly probably around the horseshoe here. So I'm very supportive of this motion. I just wanted to say that I was part of a team that worked together to help save the jobs back in 2010, and at that time we were trying to save approximately 1,400 direct and indirect jobs. And at that time it was led by the Economic Development and Tourism Corporation General Manager, Jim Tiber. And once again, he's just going to have to muster up and lead the charge along with council to ensure that Woodbine stall policy, which is very harmful to the town of Fort Erie, that we gear up for another fight and to make sure that the Racing Consortium is noticed for the great strides that it made towards a successful track record in the last 3 years, and
trying to stand on its own feet. Again, you know, this Woodbine stall policy is very harmful, and we have to show our strength. We have to stay strong, as Councillor McDermott stated, and continue to fight for the survival of the Fort Erie racetrack and the positive socioeconomic impact that it has on our community and the surrounding area. So I am in full support of this motion. Thank you.
Councillor Butler, or the Councillor Passera?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing this comes down to is money, and it's Woodbine Entertainment Group, WEG, and I would highly suggest that the five-letter G word shouldn't stand for group, it should stand for greed. It's nothing more than that, and I certainly hope the province takes notice. Minister Leal's comments that this was the first he'd heard about it, as Councillor McDormand stated, I question that, but I'll take him at face value. If that is the case, this is definitely an instance where the tail at Woodbine is wagging the dog at the province, or the horse at the province. And this has to stop. There's no way that this can be allowed to go forward. And hopefully somebody at the province with some common sense is listening. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The Chair will recognize Councillor Zenko, then Councillor Lubertz. I'll finish with his worship, and I also wish to make some comments on this, so everybody will have the opportunity to speak before we vote. Go ahead, Councillor Zenko.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I absolutely agree with my colleagues, and I thank Councillor McDermott for bringing this forward. I, too, am very hopeful that once this gets to the province, then perhaps it will be reversed, but I just wanted to thank you for bringing this motion forward and let you know that I am in full support of this.
Thank you, Councillor Zenko. Councillor Lubertz?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to go back a little bit, I think it was the last term of council when the horse racing industry was really taking a hit, and there was a lot of controversy as to whether Fort Erie was going to have a racetrack, and we were almost closing it then. It was the province that came forward and put together the plan for horse racing in Ontario. And maybe if there's some members of staff that can verify that, is that what happened? If I remember correctly, that's, to me, the province brought it forward. Is that right? Does anybody remember that?
Mr. Cookett?
Through you, Chair of the Councillor, honestly, I can't remember. I wasn't that involved back then, Councillor Lubert, so I really can't answer your question.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that that's the way it was. And Councillor McDermott, in his motion, mentioned that he's requesting that Council meet with Kathleen Wynne, our Premier. And I think that one of the questions that needs to be asked is, I probably won't be able to make that meeting since I'm working during the day, but one of the questions I would like to see asked of Kathleen Wynne is, how can the province put together the plan that's going to save the racing industry in Ontario, which included Fort Erie, and now Woodbine can come along and implement a policy outside of the province approval? And I don't know that Woodbine is really acting in the best interest of the province as well as the best interest of Fort Erie. So that's the question I'm hoping will be asked, and I doubt it very highly if Kathleen Wynne will be able to answer that properly.
That's a great question, Councillor Lubertz, duly noted, and I agree that question should be carried forward. The Chair recognizes your worship.
Thank you very much, Chair. Threw me right off track. No, you didn't. I want to commend Councillor McDermott for being so passionate about this particular issue and being on top of this issue. I think we all feel the same way. These are when the racetrack here is threatened, it affects family, friends, neighbors. It affects the community, and Councillor McDermott, you've hit the nail on the head. It's very important for this resolution to pass because it gives the entire strength of council behind a letter that I sent to the Premier last week with respect to this issue. This is the whole council, and I must say that, and I am biased, but I believe that this council is best placed of any in the past to stand up to the provincial government with respect to an important issue. I'm hoping that Minister Leo was correct. I'm hoping that the Woodbine Entertainment stall policy, which would restrict the movement of horses in Ontario, was news to them, just as it was news to us. It seems to me that that's probably the way Woodbine operates. They pretty well do what they want and then continue on unless they're stopped. But the Ontario Racing Commission has a very fundamental role in Ontario with respect to horse racing. And when you align their responsibilities with the provincial government's efforts to revitalize horse racing in Ontario, it's hard to imagine how Woodbine could even, perhaps not with a straight face, suggest that this new stall policy actually will promote growth in the horse racing industry in Ontario. That's about as counterintuitive as you can imagine. I also wanted to say that it's very important for us to stand up very stridently with respect to this issue, because under the current government's watch, we've lost a hospital, we've lost the slots. For heaven's sakes, we've lost a tourist information center at the second busiest border crossing between Canada and the United States. And we should not on our watch permit this type of conduct by Woodbine Entertainment to threaten the racetrack of all things, which has been here, as Councillor McDermott has said, for over 120 years. I believe that the Premier is serious in trying to promote the growth of the horse racing industry in Ontario, and I hope that our efforts will not be fruitless. This is the beginning. This is simply the beginning of our efforts to not only ensure the longevity of the Fort Erie racetrack, but hopefully to expand the racing card there, so that when it's not that long ago that it was 120 days, not 40 days, and that we will take strides also in conjunction with the other things going on in Fort Erie to get back gaming that was lost here, which really is, in my view, the long-term solution to many of the problems. So thank you very much, Councillor McDermott, Councillor Butler, for seconding this. I do hope that this will pass, and I'm certainly fully supportive.
Thank you, Your Worship. Since everybody's had a chance to speak, I just want to say my piece on this is that, as Councillor McDermott said, and not to belabor his point, but this is a direct threat to the livelihoods of all the people that work at the track, especially with the constituents in my ward will be severely impacted. A lot of them work in the supportive functions with horse boarding and growing feed, etc. Minor Brothers just built that brand new beautiful building out in Stevensville. They'll obviously feel the economic impact, and we're looking at significant job loss and income loss to people that, you know, as a community, we're just starting to get back on our feet. Again, Woodbine operating in a vacuum, I don't know how the province can allow that to happen. And although they've mismanaged the health and energy files considerably, we should not allow them to mismanage this. I'm wondering if Councillor McDermott would be open to possibly debating a friendly amendment that, along with his motion, we add one final that the province appoint the Fort Erie Live Racing Consortium to a seat on the Racing Alliance, since it's in its infancy stage and in the framework stages. They make us a permanent first member at that table. I just want to know how you would feel about adding that as a final that we request that the province add FELRC as a permanent member at the table for the governing body of the Racing Alliance.
I have no problem with that at all.
I just want to make sure that that's acceptable to the seconder of the motion as well. Councillor Butler's nodding in an affirmation. Does Madam Clerk wording for that?
It started off one way and then it went another way, so a repetition of the intention would be appreciated.
The intention is that we add a final that states that the council for the town of Fort Erie hereby requests that the province assign a permanent seat to the Fort Erie Live Racing Consortium as the executive of the Racing Alliance. So the Erasing Alliance is going to be made up of a body of executive, like an executive body, an executive board. Sorry. Thank you. Yeah, the word I was looking for was, if we can break for 5 minutes, I'll put it together, write it out for you, and then come back and state it. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. We're back from adjournment, or recess. Councillor Passero, I'm just going to ask that you the friendly amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to do that if the clerk could read back what I wrote during the recess.
Certainly, through you, Chair Nutt. The friendly amendment would be to paragraph 3 of the motion, and it would be added at the end of that motion the following words, and requests that the Province of Ontario designates the Fort Erie Live Racing Consortium, a not-for-profit organization, as a permanent member of the Racing Alliance.
That is exactly what I had in mind, and I would like to put that forward for approval by my colleagues.
Councillor McDermott, Councillor Butler, okay, both in the affirmative agreeing. So since we went into a 5-minute recess, I'll just ask the clerk if she could please read the motion in its entirety, and then we'll vote on it. No, I am kidding, Your Worship. So if there's any comments or questions on the motion as amended? Sorry, just the amendment. Right, we'll vote on the amendment. Well, it's friendly. We can, right, it's part of the motion, so I thought, okay, so we'll vote on the motion as amended. All those in favor? None opposed? That carries unanimously. Okay. Are there any other items of new business or inquiries? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just going back to the announcements made earlier by our mayor, Mayor Redicop, it's kind of disappointing to hear that the snowbirds are not going to be coming to Fort Erie, but I guess we have to accept the decisions that they make. But now that we've got the word that they're going to be canceling, I'm wondering if Mayor Redicop and Councillor McDermott at their next meeting with the EDTC would ask the board to reconsider their position as far as supporting and contributing to the Canada Day 150 or Canada 150 parade now that the I'm assuming they were in for $7,500 of that and before they put that into their reserves that they would reconsider the Canada 150's request.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts, Your Worship.
I'm good with that. I'm just wondering, what's going to happen to the money that we've, or have we already put money up? I'm asking the CAO.
Mr. Cookett?
Through you, Chair, to the Mayor. We haven't been invoiced for anything at present. I want to say a big thanks to Nick, who works for us here. He's put a lot of effort and time into making this all happen. I don't know if everybody's aware that, they had the dinner lined up with the air cadets and Mayor and Council was invited to that. There was a session at the school with 400 kids going to be in attendance with the air cadets there and so forth. And then all the work that has gone into booking the rooms and getting the sponsorships and so forth. So to answer your question, I don't believe there's any cost to us at this point. It's very unfortunate. We don't have an official word of why they canceled. We just know that it's us and four other municipalities. So it's hopefully we can get them back next year.
Thank you, Mr. Cookett. Your Worship?
We have a meeting. We have a meeting this week, I think. I can raise it. I mean, we were given a response to the inquiry that you had raised, which I was going to provide in regular council next week, but I don't have a problem raising the issue.
Thank you, Your Worship. Are there any other new business or inquiries? Seeing, Councillor Passero.
Just on the same line of topic, I know that we've been told that it's not happening on the date that it was supposed to happen, but have we heard anything further to that as to maybe it will be rescheduled later this year? I'd hate to throw money towards something else until we have some further information. And secondly, regarding the EDTC budget, since it was already raised, I know that some members of council took high exception to the fact that the EDTC invested money in the golf tournaments held at Cherry Hill this past year. So I think we need to be consistent in how we ask the ADTC to allocate their funds. We can't say that one is acceptable, but the other is not, based on who we may or may not be friends with involved in the organizing of those said events. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
They have a policy, and I presume that the ADTC will follow their policy.
Thank you, Your Worship. Mr. Cookett?
Yes, to answer your first question, Councillor, it's very unlikely that they'll reschedule. It was hard to actually get this date. They are book solid. It's my understanding that they are flying back to home base, and they will not be doing any flights until June for whatever reason.
Thank you, Mr. Cookett. Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on Councilor Passero's comments, we go back to the EDTC, and if we look at the newspaper article that we all received over the weekend in the Times, the EDTC says that they don't have a mandate when it comes to these items. So I don't know that they're going to be violating anything by supporting any event in Fort Erie. So if they have no mandate, I don't see that they're going to be doing anything wrong. And I think it's important that everybody in Fort Erie supports and shows their support for anything with Canada's 150th.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. I don't think we need to continue to beat this dead horse, so I'm going to move on to the business status report. Are there any comments or questions with regards to that? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back to His Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. And that takes us to infrastructure services. And is that Councillor Lubberts again? Okay, Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Infrastructure services is now in session. We have one delegation tonight, Mike Cluche from Fort Erie, in regards to the presentation of recommendations and business plan for the public transit services. Mr. Cloutier, can you state your full name and address for the record, and if you have a report or anything that can, after you can hand over to our clerk.
My name is Mike Cloutier. I live at 910 Garrison Road, Fort Erie. Here I don't really need much of an introduction. But thank you, Mr. Chair, members of council. I'm glad that you deferred further considerations of these two reports to provide the opportunity for you to go over them, to discuss with your constituents, however it is that you wanted to go about it. I've prepared a little bit of a presentation. This will show you basically the things I'm going to be dealing with tonight. I want to tell you that those buses, excellent. They're 26 passengers. You see that there's a handicap accessible ramp on the front. In the rear, it kneels in the front. Quite comfortable. They're able to, very rugged, handle some of the rough roads that Fort Erie has, and which became the detriment of the first set of Fords that we got in 2012. So I think the efforts that the provider did to provide us with these newer urban-style transit buses is very much appreciated and has contributed quite a bit to an increase in the ridership, over reversing the downward trend that we had experienced since the contract came in 2012. So we're just going to jump right in. This is what I think that the town should be doing right now. Make some minor adjustments to the current route to improve the customer convenience. Sell the system to the people. Engage with the public with the new plans that you want to have about expanding even more and to plan for the future. specifically some of the infrastructure needs, whereas to undertake some of the studies of the locations for shelters and things like that, even if we were not to go forward with the routes as planned, there are still some obvious places where shelters and some infrastructure can be built. And included in that, too, is to assess whatever municipal assets exist land-wise to create waiting areas, hubs, whatever. And specifically, I'm brought to in the land committee minutes of a couple months ago, I saw an item about a failed tax sale on a couple pieces of property at the beside No Frills. That's been the description. I did some Googling and found that one of the pieces is owed minimum tax sale price of $800,000 and another one of around $200,000, maybe $250,000. So those sound like they're pretty significant pieces of property. And if they're beside No Frills, that's the obvious place where the town should be considering making a hub or a node or a junction for the buses, not at the municipal center. Finally, you should maintain the existing contract that you have now with CanAr to the end of its expiry period, which I believe would take us to 2019, I believe. I don't quite remember. It was 5 plus 3, 20, I think it is. Okay, and also with some changes to that to ensure that the town controls the fare revenue. Right now, it all goes to CanAr. Later, I think it's an important top priority to serve Stevensville. Increasing of the service times, expanding the hours that they're available for work, the hours that the buses are running and the number of days. But like I said, that's a later type of thing that we can take a look at. There's parity requirements that are required. If you expand the amount of time that the transit is available, you have to provide the same amount of time on the fast. And you also have to provide for parity in the fares. So there's a cost associated with that that's not highlighted in the report. I don't know what that amount might be at all. It's certainly not nearly as much as $300,000+ that we want to do for the conventional transit, but there is a cost that will be associated with that. When the contract has expired or at a mutually negotiated date, you should re-tender the contracts for the conventional transit. Right now we have a system where the provider owns the buses, operates the buses, and does maintenance on the buses. I think that the town could take a look at owning its own fleet to bringing on buses incrementally as expansions are needed and to be able to plug them in to into a route that I sort of have semi-sketched out in a modular fashion. Now, the operations and the maintenance, the service maintenance, can be dealt with separately. CanAr itself, it runs a few routes in the region of York, not all of the routes. It's not the provider for the region of York. There are a few contracted providers that do it. York owns the fleet. CanAr does maintenance for, I believe they do the maintenance for all the buses in York Region, and they also operate some of the buses. So there's some precedence to create a more of a customized fit, especially if we wanted to take a look at the town owning the fleet. There and some problems with that that we can discuss later if you want. I don't really want to get too tangential on you because we don't really have much time here. And later, I think the town could consider the creation of a new position, transportation professional, to manage transit and to deal with traffic and transportation issues. I guess the staff person that deals with anything that the traffic coordinating committee would have to do to do traffic studies, check warrants for stop signs, lights, etc., that type of stuff. I noticed a few traffic coordinating committee reports that doing traffic counts and things like that are contracted out. I think that might be the type of thing that a town staff could do. And I think it wouldn't take all that person's time, and I think it would allow for some more time to be devoted to the transit. I understand that the transit manager has a lot on her plate, and transit's one of those things that's just going to grow and become more complicated and a lot more things to be kept on top of. So there's an idea. And then expand service to underserviced neighborhoods as demand warrants. I love this map. This is the map that I showed you last time. The route there is the current route, except for a few mistakes, and that's a very good basic start. My idea is to split up that route into two routes, basically serving the same areas. You have the East End Bunch.
Excuse me, Mr. Kluche. I just want to remind you have 1 minute left, so I hope you're...
No, this is going to be a lot longer than a minute, sir.
All right. We'll have to make a motion to extend.
Yes, please. Thank you. To split up that route into two with connections in the Garrison Business District, which is the 100% most popular place for people to go to take the bus. Okay, so you can forget about that line at the middle at basically the town hall site. And if you have a bus serving North End, South End, Lakeshore, and the Garrison Business District, and another bus serving Ridgeway, Crystal Beach, Crescent Park, Thunder Bay, and the Garrison Business District, and running them back and forth instead of creating this big loop where the buses essentially just follow each other around. I think that's a place where we should start with, especially if we were going to look at expanding transit out to Stevensville, which would require another bus.
Excuse me, Mr. Kluche, before you get started again, we're going to have to ask a member of council to make a motion to extend your delegation. Moved by Councilor Butler. Any comments or questions?
Much time.
Oh, that was 10 minutes already, or five?
10.
10, I'm sorry. I'll keep it to... maybe no more than another 10, for sure. Is that okay?
10 minutes. Any comments, questions? All those in favor? Go ahead, Mr. Kluche. Thank you.
Where was I? Oh, yes. This is one of the routes proposed. This is the West End route. Ridgeway Crystal Beach is down at the bottom, and the Municipal Center is up at the top. Now, this map requires a little bit of interpretation. Okay. First of all, you're asking people taking the bus from Ridgeway Crystal Beach, the most popular collection point area for transit riders who, by your own data, 100% want to go to Walmart and Sobeys. They have to transfer at the Municipal Center to make that one simple little trip to Walmart. Okay, that's not a good idea. If there's a transfer, the transfer should be at the Walmart. Everybody, Walmart is the center of the universe, of the transit universe. That's where people are going. That's where the transfers can be made for people who want to go all the way up to Jarvis Street, or the same for people from the North End wanting to come down to the beach. Second of all, this looping, I wonder, well, what we've got here is, depending on if the bus is going to be turning left at Bernard or going straight through past Bernard, you're creating another big loop. People who go to Ridgeway are going to get off at Ridge Road at Dominion, and then they're going to go do their business. And you see that jog, that's Disher Street, and the bus comes out on Ridge Road, okay? And then it goes out to the beach, and then it comes back. So you drop a person off in your main business district of Ridgeway, and then to take the bus home, either has to get back on the bus where he got off and take a 10 to 15 minute tour down through the beach, and then across Thunder Bay Road and up to Bernard. That's a half a mile from Dominion Road to Thunder Bay Road, okay? My question is, well, my statement is that's a big inconvenience, and that's going to hurt riders. What I would propose is to take out that jog at Disher Street and run the bus on its Jarvis-bound tour straight up Ridge Road and turning right down Dominion, and then turning left on Burley, cutting through maybe on Risley, somewhere around there, over to Bernard. That way you're serving best the people in Thunder Bay. Your bus is cutting right through the heart of where all the people are, and there are a few people who pick up the bus there, and there will be a few more people who will pick up the bus in Thunder Bay. The idea of serving Thunder Bay Road, okay, with ideas of serving Ridgeway by the lake, you know, people are not going to abandon their cars, okay? I know what those homes are like. They're nice homes. Everybody has cars. Everybody has parking. They're not going to be taking the bus. Second of all, I've heard it many times, pedestrian problems with Thunder Bay Road. No sidewalks, deep ditches, dark, fast, animals, okay? That's not a good place for people to be catching the bus. And also, I think we've discussed the Municipal Center. Crescent Park is also a problematic area because it's such a large neighborhood. There are a few people, and it's long. And the Friendship Center, we have to serve the Friendship Center. That's probably one of the top two or three places in town where people get off and on the bus. People are not getting off and on the bus so much at the YMCA or just out here in front of the driveway for the Leisureplex, but we have to serve the Friendship Center. Plus, we also have to figure out an efficient way to serve Crescent Park. It's not bad. I think that's something that we have to work on for that. This is the East Route. This is a big circle. This defies one of the big principles that's identified in the study, is that you don't want your bus to be going around in a circle, okay? You want your bus to be operating like a train through a good, and then back and forth and back and forth, looping where necessary to come back. But to have this thing where people are going in this big, huge circle, you know, no, that's just not very good. The service areas that they're trying to hit, I think, can get covered off with the third bus serving Stevensville, and I'll show you that. And this is the Stevensville run. We call it Route North. Okay, well, it's a good try. My big suggestion for that is you can take a bus from Dominion Road through Stevensville, stop at the Black Creek Leisure Homes or the Black Creek Community Center, but not both, and then get on the Queenie and take Bowen down to Jarvis Street, and you can do that in a half an hour. Now, if you start at 6:30 and you're at Jarvis Street at 7, you're able to pick up, get to work for those factories and things like that that are at Jarvis. You can loop it back to serve the industrial park, okay, and then back and forth. And if you can do that in hourly service, I think you've done a really great job to serve Stephensville, and also to provide a half-hour trip for people in Ridgeway to get to Jarvis Street and vice versa, so they don't have to take that transfer that we're talking about. Fares. There's no data that says that shows how much money that is being collected in fares. Okay? So I got to make a guess here. And I'm going to say that the average fare is $2.25 based on the fact that you have the $2.50 one-way fare and your tickets, which are $2.10. It's a guesstimate. Okay? Multiply that by about the 50,000 riders that we have, and there's the amount, $112,500. If we reduce the fare to $2 and we hit 56,000 riders, which was the goal in the 2012 report, or the recommendations to bring on CanAR, we're at $112,000. Looks like it's a wash, okay? And people who take the bus are going to appreciate it. That extra 50 cents is a hardship for some people to do, okay? So there we go, $2 one-way fare, $6 all day, okay? $40 a month. There hasn't been very good uptake on monthly passes, because you got to use the bus 32 times to get it to reach the $2.50. So people aren't picking that up, and they don't want to pay that large amount of money and commit themselves to having to take the bus. Okay, this was brought up to me by a couple members of the Transit Advisory Committee, which I attended on.
Excuse me, Mr. Kluge, you have 1 minute left.
It's a $2.1 million contract we're talking about. I hope you realize this. Now, my best guess on ridership is that we can increase to 60,000 to 70,000 people with some route changes and some facility improvements. These are your strategic objectives. The key point that I want to point out here is that it's your municipal duty to serve Stephensville. We have to. It's not necessary to serve every single neighborhood, but as demand warrants, to do it. The key one here is to increase ridership, then build capacity. What these reports and what's being recommended is to build capacity. Build it and they will come. Yeah, maybe, but let's increase the ridership and let's start reaching the capacity that we already have and then build it. Improve convenience, we don't have to do it. Talk much more about that, except what I was talking about, looping and serving better the areas that people want to go and where they want to get picked up. And improve the Niagara links with the Falls to St. Catharines and a Port to Welland. That's off the thing. Financing, you all know how this
Mr.
works.
Mr. Kluge, excuse me, I'm sorry, but your time is up. I hope you understand council's position. We do have the rules. We allow for 10 minutes. We allowed you another 10 minutes, and we'll have to end your presentation here.
No, I don't understand, sir. If someone wants to give me another few more minutes, that's actually the last page.
Any member of council wish to extend for a length of time? Another 5 minutes? All those in favor? Okay, Mr. Kluge, you have till...
Thank you.
Another 5 minutes.
All of these things you know about, there is no provision for transit being made in a collection of development charges. I spoke about it at the last term of council during the last review. What was it, 2013, 2014? Transit should be specifically provided for in the development charges. Unless there's been some change that was made, we were told at the time that those changes could be made. Maybe the town should consider selling parking permits to help fund transit. If you want to know why people won't abandon their cars, all you have to do is ask your town staff. because I know a handful by name, okay, who live on the transit route, who don't take the bus to work, and who don't need to drive around, okay? I think, you know, if you were to say, all right, $40 a month to park in our parking lot, and you're 30 meters from the front door, all that money goes into transit. They probably won't go for it, but that's just an idea. Employer agreements, maybe reaching some agreements with employers who need to get their people in. Maybe there's some trades that you can make to help do that. That's the bus stop that used to be in Ridgeway, and then it got moved down here. This is the reason why people think Ridge Road is narrower, because the curbs are higher and they park further away from it. This is a recent addition to the transit route. This is where we now have to stand to catch the bus. This is Crescent Road. When you moved the bus from Orchard to Crescent, this is Crescent. It's a no stopping zone, except for over on the other side of that driveway, one of the arrows has been painted over, okay? So I don't understand why you want to have the bus and people catching the bus in a place that's so dangerous that it's got to be a no stopping zone. This is the extent of the public engagement for people to join the focus groups. This is it right here. Can you read it? No. You can read it here. It was used to cover up the fare box because it was not functioning. Okay. The roads that the buses go on should be the roads that are priority plowed. This is Queen Circle. This is the day after a bus skidded off the road and took out a street light where those pylons are. This is to illustrate why I think that when you do your assessment of your location for shelters and stops, you got to take a look at these places in the winter too, not just your bright sunny day. And this is an aerial view of the municipal center. This is interesting because there's nothing else around the municipal center. You have Crescent Park on the one side, nothing in behind. You have the school over on the other side. Yeah, but I don't think that you should make part of your business plan to scalp student riders. You can get them for late arrivals and late departures for band practice and stuff like that. Oh, and this is just Fort Erie from 700,000 meters. And that's all I've got to say. And thank you very much for your forbearance, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Cloutier. Does any members of council have any questions? Councilor Nutt?
Yes, thank you, Chair Lubertz. Through you to Mr. Cloutier. In your presentation, you said that we should push off services to Stevensville. So how long should we wait? Because they've been waiting an awful long time as it is.
I think you can serve Stevensville immediately. I want to get some of the routes adjusted to the current routes, get that transfer operating happening, and then we can plug in a third bus on Stevensville. It would be easy enough to plug in, and we can plug it in at any time. You've already made the dollar commitments for that, so the money is being collected from the taxpayers to do that. So I would say I don't think it's an emergency, but it's urgent, and you can do it. You could probably start it in the fall. You'll have to, it'll make negotiating the contract a little bit more difficult, but I think it's possible to do.
So 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I'm just looking for a numerical answer, not a restatement of what was in the presentation.
Before the expiry of this current contract.
So make them wait another year, that's what you're saying. Okay, in your...
I'm not saying that.
Can you answer my question then, please, and give me a time frame?
Well, if I was planning transit and I had the decision-making power, I would do it now.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
In your presentation, you draw a lot of comparisons to York, which is, you know, an area that has 1.3 million people. Obviously, it's a different transit situation there. So I find that comparison, doesn't...
I lost your comparisons to 1.3 million people?
You referenced York in your presentation a lot. Which,
yeah, that's the customer of our transit provider.
I understand that, and you're drawing their comparisons on how they service York versus what they do here, that's like apples and oranges just based on population demographics. The DC charges, to answer your question about development charges, are regulated. The use are regulated by the province, so we have provincial standards that we have to... that's something that I just recently learned. Mr. Brady's not here to answer that, but Mr. Cook it is. And that's just something I actually learned recently myself, is that we can't just designate them for anything. The province designates them for specific use. Just my last question is, how often do you travel to Jarvis Street on the transit?
I was there last week. I'll have to be there again.
Okay, about once a week. Okay, that's good to know. Thank you. You explained the reduction in your fares. You already answered that question. So I'll relinquish the floor to my colleagues if they have any questions about...
I just want to clarify the thing about York. Just simply that there are other models of working. If you don't think that the idea of the town owning its own fleet is a good idea, then the model that we're using now is probably a good idea.
The concerns that I have with your suggestion that we own fleet is, right now the person operating the service assumes all the risk. They assume all the risk for the cost of the bus, the infrastructure, the maintenance on it. That the town has no risk there.
Yep.
So asking the town to assume that portion of the risk as well as putting in money for the transit, I think that's something that would need to be debated further.
I agree.
For council, just knowing in some of my contracts that I deal with in my day-to-day job, we as a company, my company assumes the risk on certain things, and others, the client wants to assume the risk.
Yep.
So I definitely know the differences from a contractual perspective, and that's not something that I would vote in favor of for the town at all. But again, I'll just cede the floor to my colleagues. Thank you.
Any other members of council have any questions of Mr. Kulchi? Council Casero?
Thank you, Chair Luberts. Thank you, Mr. Kluche. The first time you appeared before us as a delegate, you asked us to hold off so that we could hear from the Traffic Advisory Committee. That was a passionate plea of yours. But many of the suggestions that we're debating tonight from the TAC differ from what you've just presented to us.
Yep.
Why should we go with your suggestions versus the TAC committee, who we have assembled through the process that you were advocating for?
I don't know if I want to go down that rabbit hole of how groups and committees are managed. I just want to say that there was only 3 members of the Transit Advisory Committee who voted for those recommendations. There are 8. There was just barely a quorum when those votes took place, and it was a split, and the chairman broke the tie. So I talked with 3 of the people because they were hurried up. They needed to hurry up to catch the bus. So I walked with them down here and we discussed about the transit. People don't realize that when you get your recommendations, they're recommendations from the staff, and it's their best recommendation, but it's essentially a blank slate. You can write any recommendation there that you want.
I think we're all very well aware. We all act as advocates and liaisons to the committee.
I don't think that your average person who in his first meeting has dealt with a couple hundred pages of hefty reports can be expected to fully understand some of the larger issues. I've had a lot of time to think about this. When you're on the bus, you can either think about what you're going to watch for TV tonight or think about how to improve transit. You can take them as you think. as you want. I do know that all of them were against a $3 fare, but they said, well, a $6 all-day pass, you know, okay, we'll take that too. Okay?
A compromise.
Well, you know, there's not a lot of people who take more than two trips a day. There are some, and I would benefit from it. I would probably use the bus more with a $6 all-day pass, for sure.
And if I could just ask, you spoke a lot about capacity versus increasing the ridership and spoke against the kind of build it now and they will come philosophy. How would we increase the ridership, being why would more people get on a bus if it's not going to where they need it to be, i.e. building that extra capacity?
Well,
can you reconcile that for me?
Yeah, that speaks to adjusting the current routes to provide for more convenience and the cheaper fare.
So you're in favor of adjusting the routes, just not the adjustments that are being presented to us?
Not the adjustments that have been shown, no. I don't think that those are very sound.
Okay, thank you.
Any other members of council have any comments or any questions? Seeing none, Mr. Clucci, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
You can pass on your presentation to Councilor Pizzero, and he can pass it off to
the clerk. I did send one to the clerk.
Madam Clerk, you have a copy of?
We have a copy of the presentation, but not the speaking notes. So if you had those, we would accept those as well.
Okay, thank you very much. That brings us to report number IS-05-2017, Contract of Conventional Public Transit Services for the Town of Fort Erie Extension Agreement. And this year report was postponed from our April 18th, 2017 Council Committee meeting. Have a mover. Councillor was already on the floor. All right, so it's just being brought back to the floor. So we don't need a mover tonight? No, okay. That report is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair Lubert. I have a couple of questions for the Director of Infrastructure Services. And with respect to the fare increase of from $2.50 to $3, I mean, we've had a discussion back and forth, and I understand why there would be a need for an increase in that. There's a compromise that's been put in place with respect to the all-day pass and purchasing bulk fares to bring down the cost of the ticket back down to $2.50, really, as an average overall. But in business, it's rare when a company, a private company, increases their rates by an astronomical amount of 20%. I find that is a little steep. And I understand the rationale that in the past 5 years, they haven't increased their rates. My question is, why haven't they increased their rates by, you know, a factor of 3% over the past 5 years, and why such a substantial one now? So, and then my third question is, would it be prudent for us to maybe integrate that increase over the next couple of years? So put in a 25% or a 25 cent increase now, and then January of 2018, bring that extra 25 cents to make that model $3.
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Chair. The first question was, why hasn't the transit company increased fares? The town sets the fares in this. Fares are dictated to the transit provider on what they will charge. So I think the question would be, why haven't we increased fares? We haven't really increased services, and our prices or our cost to provide transit were relatively fixed. We are proposing a significant increase in transit service now with the extension of service hours, a larger route out to Stevensville, and that's a significant increase, which mandates, I believe, an increase in fares. your third question about a phased-in approach, I think that would be acceptable. I believe $275 fare for the remaining 4 months of 2017 will fit into our budget as passed by council. And if the chair can help me, I forget the third or the second question.
Councillor Butler, can you repeat the second question? I didn't write it down either.
Actually, you know, it's very interesting to me because if we're increasing the fare rates, are we also increasing payment on an annual basis to this contractor? Because I think we are, aren't we? So we're in essence covering some of it. And from what I remember from the consultation with the consultant, he had mentioned that, or perhaps Ms. Stout had mentioned that they had to stay within a range, and that range was $125,000, which they're currently obtaining on the fares. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, we will be paying the contractor both more money in gross because of the additional service hours, but the hourly rate that we're being charged per bus is remaining very close to the existing rate. The existing rate increased about 1.5% per year, and that's in line with the proposal going forward.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be putting in the fare box to monitor how many fares are actually collected. When does that get installed?
Mr. Chair, they've been ordered. They will be installed as soon as they are available, and we're hoping early this summer, July, but certainly in place for September 5th.
So, if I may, Mr. Chair, then we'll be able to monitor that because we have access to that software, correct? And we can monitor that for the next year to see if the amount of ridership has actually increased, remained the same, or decreased as a direct result of route changes and fare amounts, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And if I may, I just have a couple of more questions. The contract that we currently have with this contractor has been extended for 3 years, but we do have an escape clause of 30 days. So if we gave them 30 days notice, we could get out of that contract, knowing fair well that it would take us probably a year to go through a tendering process. Is that correct as well?
For you, Mr. Chair, we haven't entered into an extension yet. That's what the report is on the table. But your second statement about a 30-day out is correct.
And I have just two more questions,
yep,
you can bear with me for a minute. The next question then would be, as part of the conversation that we had with the consultant when we had met with the mayor and management team, he had mentioned, I had asked the question, and I'm just wondering if you can confirm this, that it is more cost effective for municipalities, and many municipalities actually purchase their own buses and bring it in-house, and they just farm out the other side of the contract, which would be repairs and maintenance and staffing. Is that correct?
Mr. Walsh?
For you, Mr. Chair, I don't recall if Mr. Beck said it was more efficient. I do recall the conversation that there were numerous ways to run a transit system from a turnkey system such as we have here to full in-house ownership and operation.
Okay, and that's not necessary for this report to be passed or not. That's something for consideration for the future when we do deliberate after a year of observing what kind of fares have been captured in the fare box in the software system. So I think that's something that we could bring up in a year from now as a report to see where we are and how we stand and what the financial implications moving forward are.
You can certainly do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'm going to let other councillors talk.
Yes, just to verify, Councillor Butler, you mentioned the fares, the 25 cent and the 25 cent, and Mr. Walsh agreed that we could do that. Did you plan on bringing a motion forward to amend our fare increases?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to wait for everybody else to speak and then
having that, then I'll come back and do that.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. We'll remember that. And Councilor Nutt?
Thank you, Chair Liberts. I don't really have a question for Mr. Walsh. I'm just going to support this report because when I was canvassing in Stevensville, especially with elderly people, one of the concerns raised is that they do not have proper transit, especially during the winter. Many of them do not want to drive their cars, but they have no other option. They feel that, you know, with the weather conditions in this area, a lot of lake effect snow, a lot of wet, snowy, sleety condition, that they're more comfortable riding transit. So when I was canvassing, that's one pledge that I made to the constituents. I think they've waited long enough. It's been a number of years. We have to get this going. Now, we have to start somewhere. The fact that we do have out clauses gives me comfort in saying that we have time to review the data, but I don't want the service to stop for people like Mr. Kluche. He needs the transit. So we need to continue to do something in the interim until we can formulate a proper plan. And I think it's not something that can be done overnight. We have to start somewhere. We have to start modifying the routes to include the rest of the town. And I'm going to support this report. I don't think it's the end game, especially with GO Transit. We have all those considerations to take into effect. We also have another concern that really isn't addressed regionally or through the municipality on what we're proposing, but it's the southern link across the region. The region really is planning nothing to connect Fort Erie with Port Colborne and Waynefleet. And I think that that's something that we need to lobby for in the near future with the region to have a comprehensive, complete transit plan. But we also have to show that we're doing something. And I think this is the first step. I think it's a living, breathing document, and it's the first step. And I think that we need to look at all aspects. And the one thing that I did like that Mr. Kluche pointed out is we need to develop different ways for people to pay for fares, like an all-day pass. I think that's good. It's beneficial to the constituents. It's helpful to people on fixed income or low income. That's something that they can then get on the and off the bus as many times as they want during the day. So I think it's important that we do hear and take into consideration what he's saying, but we can't just put this all on hold. We need to continue with the service, and we need to make some improvements, some progress. So those are my comments on this. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Nutt, or Councillor Nutt, and I agree 100% that, you know, bringing Stevensville in will only give us some leverage when we do go to the region, because my fear always was when we go to the region, they could always come back and say, well, you're not fully servicing your own municipality, and now you want us to fully service the entire region. So you're absolutely correct, and we need to show that we're going to service our municipality. Now our leverage is to put some pressure on them to increase their capacity within the region. Any other Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question, and it's related to one of the comments that Mr. Kluche made. He had mentioned that the Transit Coordinating Committee wasn't finding a consensus, so to say, and that it seemed to be a tie, and the chair had to essentially make that decision. And that actually causes me great concern because I'm no expert when it comes to transit. My main goal with support with this report is just to ensure that it's geared towards users, and we're listening to the users, because essentially, you know, that's the users are who use the service and are going to increase ridership. So I guess I'm just looking for some confirmation as to I don't know if it's to Mr. Walsh, but if someone can confirm if that is the case, if we're having trouble finding consensus throughout the Transit Advisory Committee.
I'll give that question up to everybody to comment on, because I see three hands going up.
I was at the meeting, so Mr. Walsh was at the meeting, and pretty confident I was there when the vote about the fares took place, because the issues were raised about the students getting off the bus from Bronx or Niagara and then having to pay for a ferry. So that was an issue. They like the idea of the day pass so that if you've got multiple stops, you don't have to pay for back on the bus so that you could stop 2-3 times. So they like that. It was explained to them why the recommendation was $3, and that was primarily because that's the direction the region is going. So if you're going to have fares, there should be some type of uniformity. So I don't think it's fair to say that there wasn't consensus. My recollection is that everybody was there that's on the committee, with the exception of Councillor Butler, who wasn't available, and one other individual, so that they were there. And the vote took place, and I don't recall it being a divided vote that the chair had to break. I think they were all perhaps a little bit acquiescent in trying to move this forward, and were somewhat assuaged by the day pass of $6. But there was criticism of the monthly pass, and you know, Mr. Clucci, I think, hit that nail on the head. He's going to buy a monthly pass. If you used it every day, if you worked every day, that's 20 days a month. So that's hardly very helpful. So that, I think, was a seed that was planted that's not accurate. That's just my recollection. Mr. Waltz might have a different recollection. He was there too, and he was sitting on the opposite side of the table, so he'd have a different vantage point, different perspective.
Mr. Waltz, would you like to comment on that question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From my perspective, there was great debate on the fares and a lot of very good back and forth conversation regarding, as the mayor points out, U-passes, bulk passes, monthly fares, day passes, and the individual rides themselves. And I think the committee did come to a consensus through a vote. The majority of the members present voted in favor of the recommendation to go to a $3 fare with a $6 daily max, U passes, bulk passes, etc. So I think there is consensus there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if I may. Now, with regard to the route, how did the Transit Advisory Committee feel about the route? Because I think that's probably one of the more important factors as well. And I don't know if perhaps you could answer that, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mayor Redica?
There was a lot of discussion about the routes, and in fact, there have been some modifications made. The thing that I think Mr. Waltz should explain eventually is how the Stevensville service is going to be met. But I suppose I felt a little frustration listening to Mr. Clucci, whose views on transit I think are very good and very helpful. And I've spoken to him a number of times in the past. But, you know, here we are. This report was first before us a couple of months ago. We did appoint a Transit Advisory Committee. They've reviewed this, and now we're being told that this isn't good enough. This is all wrong. I agree that there are some modifications. I agree that you're not going to hit Thunder Bay adequately the way this map is drawn. But I believe the members of the committee were assured that this is the starting point. And as Councillor Nutt says, we have to start somewhere. So I have some questions about this as well, but you know, I think the committee, and I think that they're all pretty astute, and they've all used the service. Even one of them, who's quite vocal, you know, had an opportunity to speak, and so I think that they're good with these routes. That's my perception. Again, Mr. Walsh might have a different view.
Mr. Walsh, would you like to comment and give your view?
In this case, I concur with the mayor's statements. The routes as presented through our memos here represent the views of individual members of council through comments up to us in infrastructure services and through discussions with the Transit Advisory Committee. Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was actually very helpful. I appreciate that.
I just want to comment a little bit on as far as reaching consensus. And I know Mr. Kluche was there or here earlier saying that, you know, the chair had to break the tie, which I guess maybe that wasn't it. But we go through the process of bringing forward a committee, and the community brings forward council. And we have seven members of council, and you have members on your committee. The reason you have a few more than a quorum is so that if somebody is absent, you still have a quorum and you can still conduct your business, which, you know, the advisory committee did. And so you debated. And because there's a lot of debate, I don't know how much debate was there because it wasn't at the meeting, but if there is a lot of debate, that doesn't mean that you don't have consensus. Because if you read about governance and you read anything about George Cuff, he says debate is the healthiest thing for a committee or a council. So then you come to your vote. And if some people disagree, then that's fine. You debated, and the majority of the people came forward at the meeting and said, this is what I think is the best for the committee and the best for, in our case, the municipality and for transit. So you don't necessarily have to have a unanimous in order to find consensus. And I think in our system, in our democratic system, it's the majority is the consensus. And so I think we've established that through our committee. And this is the report that's brought forward. And this is what we're being asked to either approve or disapprove. So does any other member of council, Councilor McDermott?
Well, number one, I think that Ms. Stout and Mr. Walsh have done a good job of getting us to this point. And I agree with Councilor Nutt. During the election campaign, we did make promises to people in Stevensville that Port Erie Transit would become inclusive like it should be. But I think we all realize that this is a work in progress. It's going to be monitored, and it's probably going to be changed here and there. And but we do have to get with it. I mean, we can't keep delaying this. And I kind of think that the routes we have are one that we can start with. They're probably not going to be the same a year from now. There could be changes. And I think, you know, we owe it to our public to at least give this a whirl. And I am sure that Carla Stout and Kelly Walsh are going to keep a good watch on the service. And I would recommend to our community, once we get it, I would say use it. And if, you know, if you're not using it, chances are you're going to lose specific areas. So I think that's what we have to do. I think we have to move it ahead, and we'll make the changes as we go forward.
Any other members of council? Mayor Redekop?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I don't know why I've spent so much time anguishing over these two reports, but I've spent a lot of time concerned about the reports, possibly because I believe that a good public transit system is fundamental to our efforts to grow and prosper as a community. And the success of our local system, I believe, will have a lot to do with how we integrate with the region. So I have some regrets with respect to the reports. I'm going to support them both. I regret that it's a three-year extension that we're looking at, because I think that there's a lot of things that can happen in 2 years that might put us in a position to do things differently. I'm not going to spend too much time worrying about whether we should own the buses yet. I'm just worried about the routes and the fares. And there has been some flexibility with respect to the routes. But I did want to ask, if I might, Mr. Chair, I wanted to ask Mr. Walsh, how much flexibility do we have in these routes going forward?
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Mr. Chair, they're just a line on a piece of paper, and as long as the road goes down that, we can change it.
And how much flexibility do we have with respect to this area being the hub? I mean, because we adopt these routes this evening, do we lose flexibility with respect to the hub?
Mr. Walsh?
For you, Mr. Chair, yes, we do. Hubs, as we know, are fixed points of rotation. The entire theory, I guess, if you want to call it that, put forward by the consultant, which staff subscribe to, is that all the buses meet at our proposed transit hub at the same time, which includes our regional transit, for seamless integration, no matter where you want to go in the town. The routes are structured so that if you're coming from Fort Erie and going to Ridgeway Crystal Beach, you actually don't have to get off the bus because that bus keeps going that way. So they operate in a figure eight. The only transfer you would need would be from a regional bus or from the Green Line, the Stevensville Black Creek Line.
So the biggest concern that I would have is that we're making decisions. We're making actually quite important decisions, and we have absolutely no data. We don't have any data with respect to where people get on and off, how much, what are the busiest times of the day, what aren't the busiest times of the day. We have anecdotes. We have lots of anecdotes. They're all different. Ask somebody, they'll give you a different version. And so our biggest challenge is to get some data. And we'll have some data next fall of 2018, we'll have data. And that should help us to make some very important decisions. In terms of the hub, I think the hub is important because it needs to be a place where there are reasons for people to be there. I think the nature of the flow through of the buses, that's important. I mean, geographically, we're close. The municipal center is close to the center of the town, so I guess from that perspective, it makes sense. But I did want to ask Mr. Walsh also to explain how the service to Stevensville will operate.
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right now, it's still proposed as a 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. service. We haven't finalized discussions with our FAST provider, or FAST operator, Canadian Red Cross, but we as staff feel there's an opportunity to use the off-peak hours of the Red Cross service, FAST service, which is typically provided for our less able citizens to attend medical appointments. Doctor's offices don't open until 9 a.m. and they typically close around 4 or 5 p.m. So we can use those two buses to provide all-day service to the Stevensville line. But as I note, we haven't finalized discussions yet with the Red Cross, so I can't make any promises on that right now.
Well, the one concern I've got with respect to the Stevensville service, and I may be completely wrong on this, but it seems to me that there's a corridor that runs along Gorham Road, Stevensville Road, and in the summer, spring, summer, fall, I would think that there are people who need that service to get from Crystal Beach Ridgeway into Stevensville because there's some large employers there. Not only Stevensville Lawn Service, Garden Gallery, the zoos, Birdie Tire, and then there are the industries that are on Eagle Street. I can't believe that, to me, that's the core. I spoke at the very beginning when we were talking about all this. This is pretty basic. Who do we need to serve? Where do they want to go? Those are the two questions we need to answer. And if we've got people that need to get to work at 8 in the morning and we don't have a bus that's going in that direction at that time, we're losing fares. I can't believe that if we don't structure these routes well, that we can't possibly not increase ridership. Ridership's important. And in one of the questions that I asked Mr. Walsh earlier today, he indicated that the provider has an incentive to increase ridership. I understand that because they make more money. But my next question would be, what has the service provider actually done to increase ridership?
Mr. Walls.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have that answer right now. I know from the town's perspective, and it's also in our best interest to increase ridership, because the more riders we get on the bus, the more gas tax revenue we can achieve, offsetting the cost, lowering the net cost. What we are doing is rolling out a new branding. We're looking at web-based applications for our buses, where they'll be able to see where the bus is exactly. Mobile platforms, we've looked at some of the stats on our website as to the hits on the transit section, and fully 90% of our hits on the website are through a mobile device. So we're rolling out a microsite for that. There will be a significant publicity campaign rolling forward with the new routes, public education, if you will. But to your first question, I don't have the answer as to what CanAR is doing specifically.
I have an idea what we're doing. We're going to be spending more money to operate more buses in greater number of routes. And we're doing that because we're trying to serve the people who want to use the service. We're not going to make money on this, but I do tend to agree that a 20% increase in fares all at once is probably a little hefty. There's two ways of looking at this. I think we can probably increase ridership as well by not increasing the fare, that full amount, over 1 year. And again, look at the report and what I understand to be the provider basing its charges to us on receiving about $125,000 in fares. If that could, that, you know, even at less than 50,000 people, riders, at $250 a fare, that's $125,000. So if we can't get better than 50,000 riders with what we're doing, wow. I wonder whether we should be doing this at all. I'd like to move that we extend the extend this meeting to 10:30.
Any comments or questions? All those in favor? That's carried.
So I don't think that it ought to be necessary for us to bump up the fares all at once at one time. I do agree with Councillor Butler on that. I did want to direct, if I might, Mr. Chair, Mr. Walsh's attention to page 2 of the memo that accompanies this report. And there, at the top of the page, there are a series of bullets. Fourth bullet, not sure that I understand about the annual remuneration should be adjusted to reflect an incremental increase in cash fares above the base. What does that mean?
What page is that?
That's on page 2 of the memo.
Mr. Walsh?
Give me a moment. I'm just reading the full paragraph. I believe this reads, through you, Mr. Chair, I believe this reads that if there's a significant increase in ridership, as an example, the additional revenue would be offset against the cost charged. So there would be a reduction in fees to the town.
It doesn't say significant, it says incremental, but that's the same, you're saying the same thing. So give us an example. If we might, Mr. Chair.
If I may, Mr. Chair, through you. If the fees are based on $125,000 base charge or general revenue, if the provider collected $150,000, the additional $25,000 would be offset against the charges against the town.
In essence, does that mean that in a roundabout fashion, we're somewhat sharing the increase in fares over the base?
In a roundabout fashion, yes, sir.
CAO is nodding his head, too. So I think that's great, because then at least I feel like all the effort that we're putting in this to increase ridership is gonna be a benefit. And, is that a tactic? Okay, so because the other way I'm looking at this is on that monthly pass, do we have any idea how many people actually purchase monthly passes, or is that an opportunity for people to take advantage but they don't?
Mr. Walsh, do we have that data?
I don't have that number in front of me. I know we do have that number upstairs.
I think it might be helpful if we looked at that, because it may be that that's a fare increase that maybe wouldn't make much sense. It may not have much impact on the total revenues that are received on the one hand. On the other hand, it might be an opportunity to increase ridership, because if it was lower, more people might take advantage of it, particularly those who would use it frequently. So I'm going to give up the ghost here. I will support Councillor Butler's amendment if she moves to increase the fee, the fare incrementally from $250 to $275 for the first year of operation.
Any other members of council before I go to Councillor Butler for her amendment? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Chair Lubberts. Just two items. There was a comment made earlier by the delegate that the transit service no longer stops at the Native Friendship Center, and that's true. It now stops about 50 to 60 meters south at Phillip Street, at the corner. We need to get out of this mentality that just because the bus isn't at somebody's front door, that we're no longer providing service to that building, facility, or institution. The concept should be, is it close? Can you get there? Is it within the so many meters that is prescribed by staff and the consultant? We're trying to hit as many different areas as possible. That's my first comment, is we need to get out of that mentality. And especially going forward when we're looking at clearing all of the sidewalks in town, we'll make accessibility easier from these different points. And the second thing I wanted to bring to my colleagues' attention, and some may know, some may not, but the other goal I'm hoping of this exercise is to increase capacity within the system, get it to more parts of the community at more times so that we can get many of the riders off of the fast system, who really shouldn't be on the fast system, but for the only reason that the bus conventional transit is not getting close to where they are. And just as an example, there were activities canceled this week at a couple of different areas that rely on the fast service to get their seniors to these activities, but appointments, medical appointments, what have you, take priority. And I understand that. I think we all appreciate that. But many of the people on the fast service going to these appointments should be on the conventional service. There's no other reason why they shouldn't, except it's not going to their part of the community or their neighborhood. So I'm looking for that to be a benefit as well as we go through this exercise. So I just want to let my colleagues know that that's a benefit, hopefully, of going down this path, is to free up that fast system for many of the seniors who need it, both for professional medical reasons, but also for social reasons, which, you know, we have a Senior Citizens Advisory Committee. It's a very big component of helping our seniors get into the community, to the Euchre tournaments, to the bridge parties, to the senior centers in all three parts of the community to enjoy these activities and that social time. And right now it's just not happening because the fast van is monopolized by people trying to make it to appointments. Thank you.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a couple of more questions just for clarification after the mayor had spoken. One of the things that the mayor mentioned was the hub, and you had said, Mr. Walsh, that it's very difficult to change once a hub is in place. And so if the hub is at the municipality, my fear is that our community is growing, and eventually, I think we should be considering the fact that there should be one central hub for Greyhound buses, for the intermunicipality buses, and for our own municipal buses. Is that something that we can change, you know, 3 to 5 years from now if need be?
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Chair. When I say the hub is fixed, it's fixed with the current route strategy. We can change the routes and move the hubs. It just requires rerouting of everything. I would like to note that, I've said it earlier, Regional Transit will be using this hub as well, timed with our buses, hopefully. Or it is timed with our buses. Whether it actually makes that timing is a different matter. But the Greyhound buses are a different matter. We'd love to have them here, but right now they have their routes. It's a discussion for us down the road, certainly.
Wonderful. And a couple of more questions, if I may. So we mentioned that the tickets can be purchased. Can you just mention for the public where these tickets can be purchased at this point? And also, we talked about mobile devices. Do the mobile devices, are they able to fill for fee? So if you have an app, you can purchase it online. It fills up on your mobile device, and you can just scan it into the new smart box.
The first question, Mr. Chair, passes are currently available at Sobeys. Once the new route is in place, they'll also be available at our town hall campus here, whether it's at the arena or the front desk in town hall proper is still to be determined, but they'll be available there. They will also be available on the bus with the new Farebox technology, electronic cards. With respect to purchasing something on your phone, I'm not sure we're quite there yet, but that's a great idea.
Okay, then I am, Mr. Chair, ready to make that amendment, if that's okay.
Yes, yeah, okay. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to ask, would that be a friendly amendment, or would that be a solid
amendment?
Through you, Chair, I'm not certain. The motion that's currently on the floor has a figure in it, so if you have the new figure, which I'm not sure you have or not, I'm not quite sure what the amendment proposed is.
So the amendment that I'd like to propose is to have a phased-in approach to the new fee structure. Instead of having it all at once at $3, we would phase it in. So $2.75 for the first year and then $3 for the second year and $3 thereafter.
We have a motion.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'd like to amend the report to add after the first paragraph the following, that the fare be phased in to $2.75 on September 5th, 2017, and $3 on September 1st, 2018.
That amendment is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll ask the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That's carried. And now we vote on the motion as amended. Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor? None opposed? That's carried. Madam Clerk, do we need another extension of time, or did we just leave it open? Till 10:30? Okay. All right, that moves us to the next report, which was postponed on April 18th as well, IS-06-2017, to adopt the transit route, bus stop, and facility improvement plans, Phase 3, project number ISE-16P-BUSS-16. That report is now on the floor again, and Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Chair Luberts. Again, I just want to reiterate, I know this is a starting point. We have to start somewhere. We have to do better by our constituency, and I think this is the first step. And, you know, it's a living document, work in progress. So I'll be supporting the report. Thank you.
Mayor Redicott?
Yes, are we, the memo that's attached to this, it's suggesting that we should amend this report?
Mr. Walsh?
Yes, this, I believe that's what it recommends, because the formal report recommends, in addition to bus stop strategy, routes that have been amended slightly.
Right, because of the amended transit route.
Correct, yes.
But so then are you asking?
I'd like to amend the recommendations in accordance with the new motion outlined in the memo. Madam Clerk, should I read that? Well, I'm going to move to amend the recommendations to read as follows. Council adopts the recommendations and enhancement plan of the transit route bus stop and facility improvements plan, Phase 3, project number ISE-16P-BUSS-16, dated March 1st, 2017, provided as Appendix 1 of Report IS-06-2017, as amended per the memorandum dated May 15th, 2017. And further, Council amends the Capital Budget 2017 to allocate $50,000 from BUSS-15 and $10,000 from BUSS-16 for a total allocation of $60,000 to BUSS-17. To complete the works outlined within Report IS-06-2017, as amended above, and further Council directs staff to undertake implementation of Phase 3 of the plan to design and install capital on-street bus stops to enhance the service as described in Report Numbers IS-34-2016 and IS-06-2017, with works to be carried on past the 2017 year to be subject to annual budget deliberations. All that?
Madam Clerk, you have all that.
Thank you. What the Mayor, through your chair, just read would be the motion as amended, but we already have a motion on the floor. We have to first put forward a motion to amend it.
That's my motion, to amend.
Right, but that would be the motion.
Recommendations to read this way. So these are the...
Madam Clerk, just for some clarification, when I'm reading this here, I'm seeing that this is a new motion. So my question would be, do we not defeat the motion that's on the floor and then put the new motion on the floor and then pass that new motion? I'm asking Madam Clerk, yes.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps it would help if I just remind everyone of the email that I sent in anticipation of the amendments that would be required. So we have a motion on the floor. I have the wording for the amending motions if you'd like me to help out, and then we can go to the motion as amended as the Mayor just read, if those amendments carry.
Yes, I'm sure we'll listen to the clerk.
Okay, through you, Chair. So based on what the Mayor's end result is, if I'm understanding correctly, we would need an amendment to be put on the floor. And the amendment would read that the recommendation be amended by striking in the second paragraph $10,000 from bus 15 and $50,000 from bus 16 and inserting $50,000 from bus 15 and $10,000 from bus 16. And to amend by inserting in the first paragraph after report IS 06-2017 the words as amended per the memorandum dated May 15, 2017 to reflect the change in the conventional transit route including portions of that which are designated as flag stop service.
Madam Clerk is suggesting that that amendment be put on the floor. Would someone want to move that amendment? Councilor Zanko? That amendment is on the floor now for discussion. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Now we move to the motion as amended. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Does that move us now to new business inquiries, Madam Clerk? Thank you so much for all your help. All right, new business or inquiries, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Chair Lubertz. Through you to Mr. Walsh, can you please make a request of the region to clean the ditch and the stormwater grate and the culvert in front of the Meridian Credit Union in Stevensville? There's a lot of trash and everything in there, and during the severe rainfall that we've had over the last week, it caused flooding that backed up into...
Stevensville.
Thank you. Stevensville Galvin Garden Galleries parking lot. Yes, thank you.
That's noted, Mr. Chair.
Yep, thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Walsh. Councillor Butler.
Oops, thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Mr. Walsh. Mr. Walsh, has there been any recommendations to the region for MTERA to come down to the BIAs on the Mondays and the Fridays as opposed to the Mondays and Tuesdays?
Mr. Walsh?
No, that was in the works.
Through you, Mr. Chair, when we had our meeting with the BIAs a year and a half ago, I thought the region had said that's what they were going to do. And that's what I understood they were doing.
Exactly. And then Mr. Maiden and I had a conversation because we were contacted, the BIA in Ridgeway was contacted about overflowing garbage. And what was happening was that MTERA would pick it up on the Monday. Residents would stuff it throughout the week, and it would still be overflowing by the weekend. It was atrocious. So he was going to make that recommendation to see if they would come on the Mondays and the Fridays as opposed to the Mondays and the Tuesdays.
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Mr. Chair, I'll contact the region and determine exactly what's going on right now.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah.
Any other inquiries? Councilor McDermott.
Mr. Walsh, would you do that on our behalf as well? I know that was last week or the week before we had to have the town come in and check out the lot because it was littered all over the place because of the fact that they were having the overflow of garbage. So if you could look into that for us as well while you're at it. I would appreciate it very much.
Mr. Walsh?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chair. That was a general question I was going to pose to the region for all BIAs.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other new business or inquiries? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Chair Lubitz. While we're on the subject of garbage collection, this seems to come up every summer given the influx of summer residents. Can we talk to the region about rescheduling pickup for homes along the waterfront? What seems to be happening is, you know, pickup day will be a Thursday, for instance. They leave to go back on a Sunday night. They don't want to leave the garbage at their driveway for 5 days, so it makes its way into the garbage cans at the beaches, the waterfront road allowances, and Crescent Beach parking lots, which is one of the reasons why they're constantly overflowing for a week at a time. Just wondering if there's any reasoning with the region to change their collection schedule based on the patterns of the residents who are living in those homes. Even if it was twice a week pickup, considering that I guarantee you they're not picking up a lot of garbage on most of those streets during the wintertime, there's probably some savings to be had or some shuffling of days and pickups.
Mr. Walsh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll broach the subject with the region. That'll get the ball rolling and they can give me some guidance on how to address that back to council with those wishes.
Well, that would be a no.
Well, I would suggest they're based on the way they operate, that won't be in effect for this summer.
No, we're talking about garbage pickup and garbage cans overflowing. And
yeah.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other members of council?
Just to follow up on what Councilor Passero was saying, it would make sense to have pickups for those residences on a Monday. Region isn't going to provide service twice a week without charging us for it. They'll do that. But maybe a change in the day for collection in that area where the summer residents are, that might be something that's possible. I would probably take that approach. That would change a lot of the, that whole area then would change. Then I suppose that might change other areas.
That's through you, Mr. Chair. That's the tact I was going to take.
Yeah, okay.
Like you, I don't think they would come down twice a week unless we pay.
Right, exactly.
Any other inquiries? Seeing none, that moves us to business status report. Any comments or questions on the business status report? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councilor Lubitz.
Thank you very much for taking it over. I'm exhausted.
You should be. Scheduling of meetings. Okay? Yeah, but Transit Advisory Committee at the region, Wednesday, May 17th. Councilor Passero.
Port Erie Active Transportation Committee, tomorrow, Tuesday, 5 p.m., Committee Room 1 here at Town Hall.
Councilor Lubitz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. SPCA meeting tomorrow, annual general meeting tomorrow, I believe 5 o'clock at the Port Erie Library.
Any other meetings? Councilor Passero.
I've been advised there's a corporate services meeting or whatever we're calling it now this Friday, 8:30 in the morning. Councilor Nutt won't be in attendance, so we should be done by 9.
Well, maybe even faster, because I don't think I'll be there either. I've got a Niagara Parks Commission meeting.
Yeah, good meeting.
If there aren't any other meetings, then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Councilor Nutt, you've got 4 minutes to do this.
Thank you, Your Worship. The Council and Committee meeting for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 10:26 p.m.
All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Thank you very much, folks. Got a lot of stuff done.